You're most welcome. I think we should start with our meeting. The day is very long. The presentation. You're most welcome, colleagues, and let us start with our meeting. We hope that we are going to have a very fruitful discussion. And then the presentations. Just to raise that one point, I don't think we are going to have sufficient time. Just to take us through on the issues of MIPA. And we can do the parliamentary generally have a discussion on that. Make us understand some of the issues that you want to present for us. And then we'll be there. We agree, police department, that we are not going to discuss every basic one. They are still working on it. It's work in progress. I agree with them that they mustn't come here and prefer something that is still work in progress, not going to assist the commission. We must allow them space to finalize it and relook at it, because when they present it to the committee, they should present a final document, a final approach. So the understanding, in order to assist the committee to understand if they got any issues there. On our agenda, then they brief him on back to basic one. We are not going to deal with it, because my discussion with the leadership of the department was that I don't think it will be proper. They're willing to come and brief us. But my view is that no, it won't be proper to come and brief us about work in progress. What we need to finalize the documentation that is going to assist us as a committee when we conduct our oversight function. This will be based on very concrete understanding of the concept of back to basic. And we agree that today they are not going to present that. Once they are ready, and then they will come and present to us a very comprehensive presentation on the back to basic one. And then I thought that I was ready, because Comrade Wipu may not be here until 1. And then we may break before 1, because we're going to be here until 3. And then, but now we change it. But at the same time, we want the Director General and the team just to take us through systematically on the issues that are very critical for us. Knowing very well that there are issues there on the municipal infrastructure grant, that the Department of Sport and Recreation and Recreation, and hopefully the Director General and the team will pass on some of these issues, we have a discussion, and then a very thorough discussion on some of the issues there. Because that is very important for them to basically go to discuss in totality, not just half and then wait again, because it's not going to understand. That's what I want to put to the meeting, to accept that our agenda would be amended accordingly by removing the bringing on to basis, and that one was an outstanding matter. When the department is ready, not going to take another 4 weeks, we're going to take them 1 or 2 weeks or two, and they'll come back and be us ready to cover some of this issue for now. We thought that's how we should do it. I thought it would be very useful for a committee to see back in progress. And then I think we are with the department, that's what we should do. Honourable Chairman, I think we are with that. Okay. Now we are it. Okay, so we are with that. Okay. Can we then move to apologies then? We should have an apology. No apologies, okay. Can we then invite the department, Director General, first to introduce their team, we know them now, but just introduce their team, and then take on and then make a presentation on MIG. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much, Jeff, and good morning to honorable members. For any of you I haven't met, my name is Wilson Matonzen, Director General of the Department of Corporate Governance. I'm accompanied by the acting Chief Executive Officer of MIPA, Mr. Mashawe, who's on my right, But on my immediate right is DCG Mutok Tosikidi, who's responsible for intergovernmental fiscal relations. And on my left, immediately, is Mr. Kwatela Nibopo. He's our chief director responsible for infrastructure in the department. And we have colleagues from MISAC behind me. We have Mr. Ricardo Hansby, who is responsible for MISA operations in the Western Cape. And I also have Mr. Temba Gaga, who is one of the senior managers in MISA responsible for technical services. And Mr. Reji Nkwabe, also from MISA, is behind me. Chairperson, by way of introducing the presentation on municipal infrastructure grant, I would like to say that we have decided to blend our work as a department together with that of MISA, instead of treating them as separate presentations, because they in fact they constitute a continuum. Together, and that's how we're going to present this today. The Minister of Infrastructure Grant is a very important pot of money which is intended to assist municipalities to roll out infrastructure, because over that infrastructure is overlaid many of the base services that municipalities are required to render to our people. So the presentation we're about to give will then set out what projects are there, what funding is available, and to the extent possible, perhaps in the course of discussion, we'll then touch some of the issues you've referred to, Honorable Chairperson, regarding the desire of some sector departments to pull out of the main arrangement, as it were, and then that we will interact with more fully in the course of discussion after the presentation. If you will allow me, Chairperson, I'm going to invite Mr. Kwatela Nibopo to walk the committee through the park.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much, Chair. The first slide here is just give an outline in terms of the issues that are covered in the presentation. In terms of the background, I think the DG has been pushed. The municipal infrastructure grant is the largest capital injection in local government currently. We're talking this year about 14.4 billion. That's in allocated to municipalities. This is going to grow to about 11 billion in the last 10 years. Now, if you take a 3-year allocation, we're looking in the region of 45 to 50 billion that is being given to municipalities. Now, this program was started in 2004 through the merging of different grants that used to be administered by national government, and that was part of the reform that allowed local government to be flexible in terms of the funding that they should be receiving from fiscal and prioritizing that funding in terms of their IDPs, which is the Integrated Development Plan, which is negotiated with their communities. So if you look at what was happening in the past, we have a lot of a national department parachuting projects in municipalities. But cabinet took the decision in 2003 that we need to consolidate all capital funding into one pot and give it to the accountability of the political leadership of the municipality. And in their engagement with their community, then they happen to prioritize the funding to where the funding is needed. So those are the programs that were there were about 8 grants, capital grants at the time in 2003, but unfortunately today we have more than 20 infrastructure grants already, that are coming up every 5 years. I think it's one thing that the members of the ministry should know, which is a great thing for having through the next slide. And then in terms of the objective of the MIG program, was supposed to supplement the capital budget of municipalities. Under normal circumstances, municipalities will need to prioritize some funding, even from their internal own sources, to capital development. But MIG was then introduced as part of the reconstruction and development, looking at some of the areas were undermined or were under investment during the apartheid government. So government had to come up with this capital injection to try to deal with the poor households who, when municipalities invest their money, they may not be able to recover the cost of the investment. So MIG was trying to supplement that or subsidize that part of municipal budget. And secondly, MIG was also introduced as part of the equitable and efficient way of trying to distribute money. In terms of the backlog, what happened is that MIG used a particular formula that tried to say, over time you have more backlog than the other districts, and then the funding then gets distributed equitably in that regard. And obviously, MIG was also trying to facilitate the development of local government and also making sure that municipalities are able to be empowered as and when they finalize their budgeting process, because now they won't be managing this program instead of national government prioritizing them. And obviously, MIG was also created as a mechanism to coordinate national government activities with provinces as well as municipalities. Now, it's a multi-sectoral program. It means you fund water, you fund sanitation, you fund sport and recreation, and a number of other sectors. So MIG was then trying to then say, let's put this money so that we can also try to encourage collaboration of the peers of government. Now, if I'm to take you through the allocation formula of MIG quickly, the allocation formula has got the various components. The first component which has been allocated a lot of money is what we call the residential component. In the formula, we give it the SMB component. And that component takes account of 75% of the total MIG allocation. And that component is where you get your water. Where you get sanitation, you get municipal roads or access roads. You get the infrastructure that facilitates refuse removal, and also the community lighting or the street lighting. Those are regarded as very services that are touching everyday lives of communities. So that was given 75%. And within the component of the B component, then there was also prioritization within it, where water and sanitation was given 72%. Because when this was done, we had this saying that water is life and sanitation is beginning. So everything starts with water. Every life starts with water. So that was given within the 75%. If we're talking about 14 billion, 75% may account for about 10 billion or so. And then from that 10 billion, 72% goes to water sanitation, and 23% goes to roads, particularly those access roads in municipalities. That remains unattended. And then 5% then from the remaining goes to the removal, refuse removal, and the community lighting or street lighting. So that is the B component. Now, in terms of the T component talks to the public municipal infrastructure. In this regard, we're talking about your community halls, multi-purpose community centers. We're talking about sports and recreation infrastructure. We're talking about infrastructure that supports development of cemetery, which is something that in rural communities, it's something that touches people's life in a way that it also was prioritized as part of me. And the issues of paths, the issues of beaches, swimming, swimming pools, all those are covered by the fee component. That's 15% of the total need. Now, from that, we also have what we call the E component. When NIG was designed, it was also designed to ensure that the economy of this area are maximized. The municipality is trying to use SMMEs to ensure that we also deal with the part where we can develop small and emerging contractors. And the E component was it aimed at building infrastructure that supports the development of SMMEs. In this respect, if you go to places like Mpumalanga, you will find people selling their cars along the road. So these places are supposed to build their shelters to give them infrastructure that facilitates the development of those SMMEs. And if you go to areas like Umzimkulu, we have got a lot of infrastructure that supports the SMMEs in that regard. So that is the income, it takes about 5% of the main program. Then there's also the nodal allocation. This is the money that we give additionally to municipalities that have been prioritized by cabinet. So these municipalities form a priority in terms of addressing the nodal issue. Maybe some of these towns are decaying and so on. Now cabinet will prioritize certain municipalities, and those municipalities get that allocation. And in this regard, currently we are talking about the 23 priority districts. They get an additional link allocation and calculate the total poor households in those municipalities, and then determine how much each gets in that regard. The M component currently we are not utilizing it. We actually use the National Revenue Act in addressing what the M component tries to say we must use for. So the M component basically is the component that says if municipal acts underperformed in the previous year. So the new allocation will be minor. And if the municipality has overperformed, so that municipality will get additional. So but we're currently not utilizing that. We have used the GORA requirement that says stop withholding and the reallocation of funds among municipalities. So and then we also have another component that is not in the formula. It's something that as a national treasury, we feel the honorable people and agree that we definitely have to address some of the issues that when you go to number case, for example, because of the equitable allocation, the formula would say in a place like me, you don't have a current backlog in terms of infrastructure development. Then the formula will allocate 2 million to that municipality. Then we just say, but 2 million, what is this municipality going to do with it? Then we have this component where we equalize and we start at 5 million and above. So even if the formula allocates 2 million to a municipality, we'll then have to find a way of raising that amount to at least over 5 million, and that is one component. We do it outside the formula currently. In terms of the allocation, as I indicated, the program started in 2004-05. This year, we are already in the MPA of the program. And over that period, we as government have transferred 91 billion to municipalities through the municipal infrastructure program. And when we do the average expenditure for each and every year, we found that municipalities have reported to us the expenditure of about 8 billion. Obviously, if you go to what happens to that financial year, we find that especially withhold some of the funds were reallocated and so on. But that's what we have in terms of whatever we go to next slide. Okay, now this is just showing the expenditure over the years. From 2004, I mean the program started at 4.4 billion and it grew to 13.2 billion. It was 14.3 billion because of withholding and closing. The funding was reduced in the current financial year. So that is equivalent to 91 billion. in terms of expenditure, that is the expenditure that is there. Now, if you look at this trend, it's showing that expenditure started very high when the program started. But around between 2009 and 2013, there was a declining trend in terms of expenditure by municipalities. But from 2013-14, the trend is picking up again. Obviously, that translates to a number of issues. One of the issues, obviously, is the capacity at the department to try to work with these municipalities. But the work of NIC involves a lot of interactions with municipalities, central departments, and so on. But I think that trend is now picking up. We also did this trend. You know, every time when we come to local government elections, the year after local government election, you always have this dip in expenditure. And obviously, when we try to check what is the cause, we find that when you have new councillors who just came in, some of them get tempted to change some of the projects. Some of them have already had contractors on site, and then obviously you'll find the situation where there's always a delay in terms of the expenditure of the MIT. Can go to the next slide. Now, this slide is also showing the trend in terms of municipalities that spend 100% by end of financial year, and municipalities that spend between 50 and 99%, or from 0 to 50%. And the same trend is also talking to the same the initial trend that I showed in the previous slide. And you can see that those who spend 100%, they started it very high, but there was a declining trend until it gets to 42% in 2012-13. But you know, we're now having 130 municipalities that spend 130%, which contributes about 52%. Now, there's always the general statement saying municipalities are actually underperforming, they are not doing well. But if you have about 130 municipalities that have spent 100%, and you also have 103 that spend between 50 and 99%, where you only have 60 municipalities that struggle to spend energy. So it cannot be generalized to the municipalities that are actually struggling to spend MIT funds. There are those who are doing better, there are those who are actually not doing better. We currently, as part of Back to Basics, Honorable Chair, have also done that analysis in terms of profiling these municipalities, in terms of what is that we need to do as government to try to support them. We can go to the next slide. And this is the expenditure of municipalities in the current, the year that just ended, 30 June. So municipalities were allocated 14.2 billion, and we transferred all that money after the 130 million or so, the national treasury. And the expenditure reported by municipalities at the end of June is 12.8 or 13 billion. That leaves about 1.3 billion, which is carried as unspent. But obviously, if you zoom to that 1.3 billion, you will find that there are so many other projects that are in the advanced stage, which help municipalities when they start from July. You start seeing some expenditures are already very high. For example, in Mufima, Northwest, you find that they have already spent 30% of MIG in the current financial year. Obviously, the allocation was also reduced because of understanding in the previous year. So that's how the expenditure is. If you analyze province by province, if you analyze province by province, you will realize that Trinidad is better than all other provinces, and that was followed by KwaZulu-Natal, and the third province is Eastern Cape. And if you look at KwaZulu-Natal, you look at Eastern Cape and Limpopo, that's where we have the bigger portion of MIG. Now, Limpopo did very bad in the year that ended soon. Now, obviously, it has pulled down. If you look at Limpopo, for example, we have about 537 million that was not spent. And obviously, that was a worrying for us. We're currently working with them to try to address them more to the next slide. This is just showing the quarterly expenditure in terms of the last quarter of the year. So you will realize that from the 14.2 billion that we allocated to municipalities, 4 billion objects were spent on the mass water. So that obviously talks to the planning issues of municipalities. Some municipalities, they start the year as business as usual. No, there's no construction on site, there's nothing, there's not even consulted to design projects. And those issues need to be addressed in the previous year. So when you start financial year, you start with expenditure. Now, they started those processes within the financial year, and that's why the expenditure then grew bigger in the last financial year. So in the engineering language, they'll say, no, in engineering, you always have a S-curve. Now, the curve starts low, and then it grows in the last financial year. But we are saying that planning can also address the S-curve that we always have that in that language. Can you go to the next slide? This is where the money was allocated by municipalities. Now, I think this slide is very crucial. You have the allocation in terms of the formula, but there's also allocation in terms of the real allocation, local allocation, where priorities are taking place at local government level. Now, in terms of the real allocation, municipalities allocated 30% of MIG to water. They allocated 22% of MIG to sanitation. Then 27% went on storm water. If you go to public facilities, then they take account of 8%. So this goes with the municipal IDP. This goes with what communities have said they want in terms of what municipalities need to do. So that's where the money was spent. In terms of the league allocation. Can you go to the next slide? Maybe go to the previous slide, I think there's some point that I want to make. If you look at the Gauteng, for us, some municipalities are worried. We're going to have another set of planning sessions from end of September until November. So we call all sectors to come on board so that we engage with the municipal plan in terms of what they're going to do in the next 3 years. If you look at Gauteng, you realize that sanitation is allocated 5%, and water is allocated 13%, and 24% goes to roads, both as a nutrition get 50%. So I think for me, that's really worrying in terms of how priority was. I mean, we analyzed the M4M. We know M4M is the biggest problem of sanitation. There's been always these issues of polluting the Vaal River and so on. So the current mix allocation for employment is about 107. But sanitation gets about 5% of that. And then we're trying to analyze to see, but where the problem is. And we still, as the department, the problem comes at the early stages of planning. Because they put a lot of money on the roads. Obviously, the roads there are also challenging. At the planning stage, if a particular sector doesn't go to that early IDP meeting under the tree, obviously we are going to have this project, prioritization. And we have been saying this for many years from the department, all sector departments, it's very, very crucial to go and engage communities when the municipalities are having these IDP roadshows and so on. But some people don't even know the importance of some of these things. So, but when your sector is there, you are able to then take people to understand that we actually need to have this in our IDP. And I think that is one thing that as we go to the next round of play, we are going to deal with that in the affairs department. Can go to the next slide. This is the number of projects that we currently have. I think it is a very complex and difficult problem to manage. We have about 3,307 project countrywide. This is the footprint of MIG. Those 3,672 projects, 825 of them are projects that are water. And 457, those are sanitation. And you see the roads has got the highest number of projects. And obviously that makes sense. See roads sometimes just bring 1 kilometer. Sometimes it does bring 2 kilometers. You know, those small municipalities, particularly in the state of KwaZulu-Natal, they deal with a lot of rural roads. Now, if you go to water, you may be talking about valves. There may not be many projects. So I think these projects are just reflective of what is happening. On the sport and recreation facilities, we have about 300 projects. that are for the nutrition facilities project. I think you have said, as you put around the complaint from the Department of Sports, I think the department also needs to put together norms and standards. Because without norms and standards, you can't drive in budget. Some of the interests that we put through Link and Sports Association, some of us we are now worried because they finish it and it becomes a state of the art infrastructure and they lost the game. For the community to utilize this, they must pay, but they can't pay. And we are saying, why don't we put nonsense that they say, we're surely not talking about fancy things. We're talking about basic stuff that can encourage mass participation in terms of the force. And without those nonsense standards, it's so difficult for what municipalities should comply with when they implement the league program. And that's one thing that we have been saying for a number of years. I mean, the point in case is one sports project in Umzibu. That project, I think I should have put some pictures. It's a state of the art, but the thing that is the community utilizing it. Maybe when they have functions and so on. But for the league program, we're talking about something that when kids leave schools, they will come and play. So those are the things that we are talking about. But I think it's one thing that we have put now in the medium-term strategic framework, because we are saying that by December 2014, this year, all sectors that have got interested in me, they must have published a normative standard so that we can guide all the municipalities in terms of what they need to do, at which level, at which standard, that we need to develop this infrastructure. What's the next slide? Then this one just showing the project status of the project that we have implemented, or the project we have in the system. We have a project, 84 projects that are, they are just idling. They have nothing in the paper on them. And you have projects, 152 projects, they're still in tender and design. And some of them remain in tender and design for many months. And which is problematic for us. Now, yesterday we met National Treasury and the Deputy Minister of National Treasury and our Deputy Minister, where I think there's now indication that we need to track even this process in terms of tendering. Why projects will remain in tender and design for a long time? And if you zoom to that tender and design, you may find that even procurement policies, they have committed, they have already done the way. But the decision has not been taken. But what way is the stumbling block? And I think that is quite worrying for us. If you look at the projects that are under construction, we have about 471 projects that are under construction in terms of water. But when you go to sanitation, we have 245. Now, when a municipality has projects under construction, surely there will be a challenge. But if projects are not yet at that stage, and I think that's one challenge that we're looking at. We're going to work closely with National Treasury, and I think we're also getting support from me to try to look at that, making sure that all those projects are put to construction level. Can move to the next slide. This is just... I'm going to run things now. So this setup for Rosen Foundation, I think those are the numbers there. On the whole, we have 649 under construction, and we have 234 that are completed during the year. Can we move to the next slide? Can we go to the next slide? And then this project is community lighting and street lighting, which is what also needs funds. Can we move to the next slide? This is the number of households that have benefited from the expenditure of MIG during 2013-14 financial year. One thing that we have done here on a good chair, we have discounted the effect of bulk project. What the municipality will say, this is a pipeline, bulk pipeline, or this is a one and done. They will still say this household will benefit from this bulk line. But here we just took only the connection part, where we are saying the last part of connection. Then if you bring the bulk, because that connection will also depend on the bulk, also depend on the reservoirs and so on. So we just done with the connection part. So there are about 209,000 households that have benefited from the MIT during 2013-14. In terms of sanitation, 98,000. Sanitation is much easier because here we're talking more of VIP, particularly in rural areas. Then we can count them. It's not like water, you have bulk and so on. In terms of COVID-19, we have about 241,000 households that have benefited, and so on and so on. You can move to the next slide. I think there are a number of challenges in terms of administering the program. Some of the challenges we are working on, they are part of ongoing work that we do. One of the key challenges that I think is coming strongly is the issue of improvement of the planning. And this is what I was talking about. You know, these projects that are just hanging, they are not moving. Projects that later in the financial year, I think it's part of the planning. It's one thing that we feel that all political departments must come on board to make sure that the IDPs are also good and they are also credible. Because the IDPs actually is constituted mostly by your sector plan. There's a sports sector plan, there's a water sector plan, or WSDP, and so on. Now, if those plans are not up to standard, then obviously the IDP will be compromised. And then intergovernmental coordination and cooperation, I think we have had challenges in the past, but we are hasty that during the State of Nation address, the Honorable President has announced the establishment of the Interministerial Committee on Energy Services. That will go a long way in trying to improve intergovernmental cooperation. And this issue that we are raising about sectors not going to municipalities where they do IDPs, they will also be addressed at that level. I think it's one thing that is going to go a long way in addressing the capacity of municipalities to manage a big project. When we spend a lot of money to try to give capacity, but for me, we allow municipalities to spend a certain amount of meat to deal with capacity in terms of project management. For example, in Alfred's role, our budget from MIG to create the project management in the municipality, we're talking about 40 million. And obviously, the right municipality means business in getting the right correctly. So with 40 million, I think it can do more. But we're still having these challenges in terms of capacity. But I think MIG also is trying to also assessing that. I think that slide will come in the later slide. Payment of service providers. This is the problem area. Municipalities usually have cash flow. Now, in Makana, when they have a problem with the cash flow, then MIG comes in. Then they pay salary. And then the contractors are not paying. So those are some of the things that usually happen. When we quickly detect that, we negotiate with the district. So if the district said, we put this MIG through you, so that we don't have to get this money to build up in the system. And when the district agree, we talk to treasury and we address those issues. So, but we always have that challenge. Sometimes council decisions take long in terms of approving projects and budgets for the next financial year. And I think those are some of the challenges. Can we move to the next slide? In terms of what we are doing to try to also address those challenges, we have a lot of interventions. As I indicated, we do have a planning session every year. Like now, the second round is going to start now between end of September to end of November. We call everybody, we engage with municipal managers and the team around the priorities, the overlap is this, these are the issues, provinces are there. And the all sectors are also part of that engagement, which then help us to move forward. Now, over and above this, we also have what we call understanding meetings, where we detect challenges. We quickly zoom in and then work with municipalities. But from the MIGA point of view, which is the agency that the government has created, to also deal with capacity gaps in municipalities. We have currently deployed about 63 technical experts in terms of engineering and planning services. And these professionals are deployed to 122 municipalities. There are currently 122 municipalities that are benefiting from MISA. So when we have 63 and 122, some of them will have that they are business districts. Some of them are doing maybe 1, 2, 3 municipalities, depending on the challenges that those municipalities are having. That's how we are using those engineers. And we also have about 40 professional service providers. Now, these are the companies, engineering companies or planning companies, those companies that are dealing with a highly technical way. And in this regard, we deploy them to deal with the issues that make up necessarily need an individual technical expert. They may need a suit of a type of, you know, expertise. And then you get the engineering company that comes with all those issues. And we also have about 922 projects from those big projects that we presented that are currently being supported by this engineer. They are supporting them in terms of different sectors in water, 105 of them are getting that support, the roads, we have 173 projects and so on. So these engineers are actually helping us to unblock some of the challenges that attempt to make this project not to move forward. Obviously, we're also worrying about the skills in municipalities. We are addressing some of the skills here. We have programs through the way we train qualified artisans. Sometimes we also deploy qualified artisans to municipalities. And when we do that, we sign level agreements. We even go to the council and present to allow council to take decisions, say, after a certain period, they must absorb these people. Because we're not substituting capacity in municipalities. They're actually supposed to build capacity. So we have those programs. Like, for example, in Vende, we have deployed 56 experienced artisans water controllers. And the report that we got from that district are very good. I mean, at some point, I remember the MM was saying, we used to pay 10 million to get our graders, to get our trucks, to be city somewhere. But now you have given us, so we gave them three engineering accidents. So they are saying now these guys are doing it in China, anyway. I said, no, but MM, still going to be like that for many years. Make sure that these people are in your establishment. Well, that's what we talk about back to getting. You need to have this in your municipality. Otherwise, you can't be in municipality. Then we are also training 32 apprentices. That's why we are deploying them in 8 provinces. In this regard, we are talking about 311 apprentices. And we're talking about 228 second 13 in this regard, the people are unemployed. And 83, section 28, these are the ones that are already in the employ of municipalities. So we have deployed them in the 32 municipalities in the 8 provinces that we have there. A total of 49 apprentices, including those ones that we have in terms of the 311, as well as the 158 new recruits. Will be placed in the 56 municipalities in the current financial year. One of them we are currently waiting on, so we're going to increase the number of municipalities to benefit from this program. We realize that in the system we also have a number of institutions that are doing similar work, like National Treasury. We have rural development with nothing. We are also trying to come together with them to try to coordinate our activities to make sure that we also be effective in that regard. Can we move to the next slide? I think these are this is the work that the PSCs are doing in municipalities. What we have done diagnostics to all municipalities. Because of the funding challenges, we said to municipalities, give us the top 3 things that you want minister to help you with. These are the issues that need the highest technical work, and the municipalities have given us those issues. So when municipalities give us those issues, then we get companies to go and do them in terms of your water master plan, road master plan, reviewing the partial development framework, asset registers, all those issues, bylaws, in terms of water. So our PSCs are currently working with municipalities trying to help them with that, including the IDP review. And obviously, that's one thing that we are looking at. We just received a request from a municipality in Western Cape, Karoo district, Central Karoo. They want to meet us, come and help them with feasibility study to check if we can get bulk water from the Orange River and the Nisuru Highlands Water Project to try to deal with the potential that the district has got in terms of agriculture, in terms of job creation and so on. So that's one thing that we are currently looking at together with the Department of Water Affairs. So those are the highly technical type of work that we get PFCs to do in supporting municipalities. You can move to the next slide. Obviously, there are some other projects that we are supporting here. in terms of those are highly technical way if you find a sector of the next slide. We feel that the support that we are giving the municipalities has actually gone a long way in trying to improve some of this. But if you can see the fact that are showing the trend in terms of me, that trend now is picking up. And I believe that the current financial area we are in is going to be totally different. But we are going to do more than just talking money spending. We need to look at now the quality of that spending. What are we getting as government in that regard? And for us to do that, we have now developed a new strategy, which is also supporting the basic strategy. To say we need to know how much we are going to get in terms of households before we even dispatch money to municipalities. And where are these households at? Because that's the statistical backlog. What are the done calculations? And we now know where the backlogs are in the settlement. And it's a strategy that we are trying to move on as part of our basic level. Can move the next slide. This is the improvement of support that we are trying to put together as part of this. What this is trying to say is that we want to have district teams, and this is also in line with what the minister wants. We need to have district teams where we will put the services at a district level, so that they can be available on a shared basis in the municipalities. Because this thing of having one municipality with one support, it has become too costly, and it's actually not helping. Because we have to look at a district-wide type of challenge. And as a result of that, we feel that when we implemented that, that will obviously help us a lot. You can move to the next slide. I think this is the last slide. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. It is a very detailed presentation and not of one. But may I just pose a question before other members, the general comment or comment. I just guess that we have spent for the last 10 years now about 90 billion rand. And I think it would be a good idea to know the impact that you are making in communities. Because if we have spent 10 in a decade, 10 billion rand, plus minus 10 billion rand. But people are still protesting on the streets everywhere. And then what is the impact of the amount? Because I think general Nanomase Council, that is a lot of money. We should be able to see the impact of changing the quality of life. So go forward, people. It's important that, Katelani, as you move on, also to assist us on that area. Where will we observe change of life of people in terms of the money that we are spending? There is a lot of money, you know, of course, a lot of money, Qatar, we are spending a lot of money. Whether it is corresponding with the quality of life that we are improving as we spend money. Because the money is meant to be spent to improve the quality of life of people. And in your own money, measurement as a department overseeing the implementation of the resources there, implementation of the project, would be important just to assist us sometimes to comment on that as you wrap up, just to give us an overall assessment and observation whether the last 10 years has been very useful in terms of the improvement of the quality of life of people, even the protests that are taking place from many corners of our country. And then given the fact that in Kuruman and other areas, kids are not going to school because of a certain road, just one road. And for the last 3 months, children are not going to school. But you see that there are resources that could be assisting them. Because I think it would be illegal anyway for parents to use the children for protest the whole system, denying them education. I think it's illegal. It's something that the society must condemn, not only what is happening in Parliament. I think we should condemn that because it's a bad way of doing things. The night shift is still young kids to the abortion to go to school. And then young kids, I think it's 17 years old, I say, I think that is my last chance. After this, I think my life would be a disaster. I don't think the society is taking everything serious. I think we are expecting something is paramount to sarcasm. to deny children to go to school because of bathing water, bathing children. But the one that I'm raising children is that we must deal with some of those issues, because if there are resources that are put forward by government to address this sharing about this and by local authorities, then colleagues, I must invite you. I think there will be people to make comment on that, honourable member. Let me invite members of the portfolio committee to pose questions, to comment, and to deal some of the issues. It's very clear that as we design our oversight program, we have to visit some of the 23 districts that we have identified just to see exactly what is happening there. Because those know that. And if you build a very beautiful sports facility but no one uses it in Wamaramlela, then it's a big problem on that as well. On our table, you want to make a point with my son, or I will say more. All of you, let me say all of you. Let me start with you right at the corner, man.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. First and foremost, let me apologize for arriving a little bit late. There are a number of activities that are taking place at the present time. I'm not going to pose the question for now, Honorable Chair, but I would be very much interested if the presenter could give us the list of the 32 municipalities in 8 provinces that are being supported with the apprentices, because we would need to make a follow-up on those municipalities. If we can get that kind of a list, we can send it to the chairperson so that we get the list of the municipalities. Thank you.
Thank you for that. I think the other point, Chair, you've touched on it. There's this issue that I think the government is noting it with concern, the issue of perpetrators, because in the representation that we've received, it's cropping up, and I think we must attend to it very seriously. And the issue of meaning in terms of the support of the project. There's this issue of stakeholders. And one important stakeholder, I think, Chairperson, as you were making a comment or rather the concern about the department, it has already spent this 90 billion, but in terms of the value for money and also the ownership of if many people have been given a service, they need to be appreciative of it. We need to be seeing them. That we see it as having no protest. But it says when these plannings are happening, there are these people who are left behind in terms of your community. Attending these IDP meetings, communities do not attend those IDP meetings because at the end of the day you see them talking about the services that they see that they are important to them. But you find that as you are also doing a presentation somewhere else, you did say the sector departments will like parachute to local municipalities and implement projects, sometimes projects that are not in the IDP, and that projects, you find that at the same time, they are not a priority, as you also indicated that somewhere as you've also mentioned that water is life and sanitation is dignity, but you find that those projects are not being prioritized accordingly. So I think the department should come up with strategies rather mechanisms in winning the community and making the community to understand that it is important for them to be part of everything at the initial stage, like when IDP will be at the end of the day said it's credible, you know, they should know that it is their work and they are the ones that have in a way produced it. And then with the issue of districts, because sometimes we find that districts, sometimes they behave as competitors to local municipalities when they have to work with them. And sometimes they work in silos. So I think this is another area that really needs to be looked at and attended to. As you have said, that maybe this MIG should be managed better by the districts. So if we are still having some challenges that districts sometimes do not work as people who are to assist the local municipalities, but they sometimes work as big brothers or big sisters, with that notion that they are not correctly assisting the local municipalities as it is expected. I think other issues may also be covered by my colleagues, by the honorable members. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, my first question would be, but maybe to the clarity, because on the presentation, the emphasis is on district council. That it may make it responsible only for district council, because I've heard nothing on the metros. And also, whether on the allocation, is population also taken into consideration? Because most of the metros, they are inheriting people from the district councils. The other issue that I would need clarity on is the relationship between MIG and USDG. Is there any relationship between them? That is the two. The presenter also raised the issue on the allocation. He said if the allocation is around 2 million, they use a particular system outside the formula to raise it to about 5 million. That is an amount. I would be interested to know what formula is that, or such a FAMSAC. There is also an issue on the capacity in municipalities, and I think my colleagues have raised that issue. I know that in municipalities there were these PMUs. Now, in terms of the presentation, there was an indication that there's MISA. Now, I want to check whether MISA has replaced the local PMUs in municipalities or even additional capacity that is in the local municipalities. And in local municipalities where they don't have these PMUs, what is the position? Is there a possibility of establishing that is no structure? Because yes, it is true that there is a service capacity program that is in local municipalities. The last point would be on the streamlining of the budget cycle. Because this seems to be a problem if you look at municipalities' budget cycle and the national budget cycle. Because most of the municipalities, in their planning, unfortunately, they don't factor them. And hence, you find that there is an expenditure that is from quite a number of municipalities because of the problem of the budget cycles. Thank you, Chair.
No, we can come down.
No.
Mention that the city is basically.
Thank you, Chair. My question is based on the issue for the padlock of sanitation and other municipalities. The backlog of sanitation and other municipalities, like Moreto Local Sanitation, was given 99 million. For sanitation, whereas we are budgeting for 625 million. Now, my question is based on that. What is the department is doing closing to that gap of getting the sanitation to another municipality? Was that gap from where the committee came to that sanitation? That's what I'm asking.
I think
thank you very much. saying that the history of Misa is a history of centralization of meat hunting. Meat hunting has been there for many years. So there's a segment that was put forward that Misa is going to improve the situation. That pulled together all these funds into this one organization. Unless we discuss in that kind of way, it's very difficult to make any headway. Whether we are or not making progress. Now, so the argument was that decentralized, these funds are not making impact. That's the same kind of what the argument. And the organization was then put up to ensure an effective intervention. Now, the second that one notices is that there's no sense of strategy that matters. There's no sense of a plan. That's the first one that I've been through. What I mean by plan is three essential elements. One is the diagnostics or the outline of the challenge. For example, the country faces huge problems. And some of these are reflected in the number of informal settlements in the country. In Johannesburg alone, there are over 118 informal settlements. About 200 in Mauritania, 200 in Swaziland. A huge problem. Now, does me, as centralized, speak to the problem of this kind? No, it doesn't. Now, we can't have a centralized fund with a very big organization set up, and it doesn't speak to the concrete problems that face the country. Now, I've just mentioned Johannesburg, Swan, and Rulin, but I think there are kinds of problems in Tewin, on the metros, around the Sumerian metro, around Cape Town, as we know, and so on and so forth. Now, the third element of the plan is then a sense that this is how the company or the entity is going to respond to the challenges. And the third is a sense of a coherent implementation plan. This is how, you know, the work is being carried out at the moment. There's a bit of element of that, but we are not convinced that it is concrete in our, of course, in the British military in an ongoing way. And then, as an outcome of all of this, there is a sense, therefore, of evidence. That in the past, how many years now? The system has been in place now. It has been in place now for how many years? For
2 years.
2 years. That's very new. Yeah. But there must be evidence that the progress is being made. So I think that's the idea. You can look into that. The other question that I want to raise from this case is in relation to a little other point in the presentation. There's a whole question about sports infrastructure. That's the one example. The problem we have in South Africa, which is the kind of starting at this point, is really that we have standards already that have been set in the country. So, apart narratives that may have been in some misunderstanding as well. Now, if you go to a township environment, one of the or in the rural area, the majority of people refer to us, you can't fail to recognize the substandard. It is the facilities are there, or simply lack of facilities. So if you start in the formerly white suburbs, what you find there is stadia. I'm not saying stadia. Stadia, for instance, this community that we took the stadia, for Rabi, maybe multi-purpose facility for Rabi, soccer, you know, and so on and so on. And these are class facilities, class, well looked after and well maintained. Then you go to the suburbs that were largely Indian and colored. They're not able to match the standards in white, this money white, and so on. And going to the township and so on, the situation becomes even worse. Very, very poor facility or no facility at all. One of the issues that will arise was the establishment of facilities where none exist. Where these exist is the whole question of maintenance of these facilities. How can you show that the balance of tenderness is where it is supposed to be? As well? You see the one I'm making. So this is the reality. So if a person will change, you must see this change. You must really see it. If you can't intervene at the same time, all over, yeah? Even an ordinary person in the description will give you a sermon. Maybe the enemy or some other thing, they'll come to my area, maybe, in my lifetime, they'll come to my area. But there must be a sense that there's intervention made in this area, in that area, and a visible, tangible change. So we need to answer that question. How is intervention going to be? If it means over above the minister funding and budget, then be a discussion with some of the municipalities and so on. What discussion? What formula? How to nudge people in the right kind of direction to ensure that things begin to happen in some meaningful sort of way. The second commission that I want to make is really maybe it's a little point. For instance, in addition to grassing of soccer fields in the township type environment, I don't know, nothing stops us from saying we shall establish a farm where we farm on grass. Hope I'm understood. Farming on grass, then really you plant grass, you measure it and so on in the farm. And in an ongoing way, the farm supplies the society and environment to go high. That will all assist in the nature that that's good enough, ensuring that there's employment, some employment of some kind, but also that they supply in an ongoing way to make sure that this place that look at. And this is a particular working area where townships are huge. An example of that is in Soweto, for instance, over 25 townships. Soweto is not a township, it's a cluster of townships. Now, if an intervening in an environment like that, then Buahumu becomes a by the by, you know, there you can simply just attend the problem because it won't be that huge here. To see what I mean. The next one I want to make on the case is in relation to data. Sometimes there's resistance to establishing community halls. My own little experience. Because, you know, we want the servant to maintain even the other songs. But the fact of the matter is that if you do a very quality standard of community also established in many of these areas, you can take care of some of the sporting needs, funerals, you know, weddings, so on and so forth, as the case elsewhere in some of the communities. So the challenge is huge, really we do want to have, in my view, take into account history, why this thing was established in the first place. Because if Mitra is not ready, then there must be a disestablishment. Cookie booth, I mean, disestablishment. But for it to work, also need a plan in place. And I've outlined, of course, what I think the elements of that. And must be evidence of progress. If there's no evidence of progress, what are you going to be now? Well, what means that may become in effect? The possibility. What it may especially become is that it may become a bureaucratic structure, an organization that doesn't live to expectation. So, the DG and the team have a responsibility to make sure that MISA works. And it must start working right at the infancy. Because later on it just becomes a broken machine and a problem. That we have been about to come out there, it's not working. We want to know what we want, what to do with it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is very short. I wanted to ask you to speak to the principal of cooperative government. Because the national government, you are just there on top. But if we pursue the notion of cooperative government, we grab the wheat on the departments at a provincial level to ascertain that they do something to ensure that municipalities do their work. So that's the beginning. So that it doesn't take long for an underperforming municipality to be brought back on track. Just an example, for example, is an example of Bofana municipality, which was recently sort of disbanded. After a very long time of disruption, a long time of lack of every delivery. Now, it seems to me when there is no urgent intervention, because as the national government, as the national department, you may be aware, but at the provincial level, there should be urgency in taking the whip to ensure that that municipality performs, and if you don't perform, you're just out of the department. You know, I'm saying this because it takes long, and there is rioting, there are sit-ins, and in the meantime, people destroy the property of government. Which property they are still going to need again. So I should think that kind of an intervention to say to the provincial departments, do your work, ensure that you put them online. And secondly, yes, there is a shortage of skills. But again, you find that in some instances you have people within the department, the engineering department, for instance, who will not know exactly where the projects are. No local inspection is done. Yes, if you've got people who are doing the work, you've got consultants, you can't rely on them. You need to do some local inspection from time to time. You find that they only ended up when seeing the project when they were the 410. Then the project is kick-started and then officials don't monitor, they are not there, they rely on certain individuals. I mean, you pay them, but anyway, you must know exactly when the project is done. The crater is just collapsing there, it has been there for quite some time. Project takes all these things, and should think, mine is more of a personal comment, Chair. those are the two things that we need to attend to. As you correctly put it, that such kind of thing impact negatively on the life of the people. Then you see people blocking the roads, you see people, the schools are closed, and well, you say it's stuttering, but it emanated from somewhere for a long time. It went on unabatedly. No one was prepared to intervene and ensure that things are put on track as soon as possible. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mike.
Yeah, I just want to reflect on slide number 6. About the status of water and sanitation. Column number 2, after progresses, it's registered. I think it's registered project. So if you look at the state, there is no project registered according to the slide. But there is a design and tender. So it's a little bit confusing. There is no project which is registered, but we are designing and we are tendering at the same time. So when it tenders, when it comes, the other issue is the issue of shortage of skills. Months ago, this actually that we really have shortage of skills in municipalities. Our problem in municipalities is that politics have overtaken administration in terms of employment and deployment of staff. So people who are not skilled to do certain jobs are doing those jobs. They will come here and say we are underskilled, we will even import skills which are easy. For example, I've been working in municipalities as a councillor. Fortunately, I was also an official. We find that in PMU, there are people who are appointed there without relevant qualification. So, coming to implementation of projects, is that person able to monitor, evaluate, and implement the very same project? So if we are talking about skill shortage, we need to start here, where we employ people, whether those who were employed in this key delivery areas. We need to employ people who are relevant to those areas of employment. So my worry is that in South Africa we always raise the issue of shortage of skills. We have universities, we have technical, we have colleges. What we produce, but those people are unemployed that we are talking now. The other issue is the issue of it's EPWP or something like that. Yeah. So if we take away positions from appointing those people to do those projects and officials must manage those projects, we won't get this with yellow overall in the whole day under trees. And they are paid through that factor you mentioned. So they are sleeping there because they got to produce, they are not reporting to officials. But if those projects are managed by officials who are paid to manage this, people, I think we will go a long way. So we are also, there is also a shortage of skills in terms of cleaning our streets.
because those things are holding it. They can at least be holding.
Thank you.
Well, I love you. The
politicians are not minors. They are, they must do oversight.
Okay.
Second Chair, Chair, I think I want to start by looking at the impact, looking at the impact of this 80 billion that has been spent over the past 10 years. Actually, it's an interesting research report by Statistics South Africa. It's called the Non-Financial Census for Municipalities, which was released on the 28th of August, about last week. It's a very recent report. It was reported on by the City Press on Sunday. Extensively. Now what this research report says conclusively is that there does not seem to be a relationship between the high level of protest and the service delivery by municipalities. The report says that over the past couple of years there has been an increase in the level of services by municipalities to the community. And that actually, the spending of this 80 billion can almost directly account for a high service delivery by municipalities. So therefore the question is that what therefore accounts for this service delivery protest, because in most instances the issue is about people protesting for lack of basic services, and Statistics South Africa is saying to us that we are supplying services to the community, the municipalities are doing that, and we know that one of the instruments that the municipalities use to provide services to our communities in municipal infrastructure grant. Most municipalities solely rely on municipal infrastructure grant to provide services to our communities. So Chair, I thought I would start at that macro level so that we must not lose sight of the fact that we are progressing as a country, and this has been presented by Statistics South Africa. The report is there. It's on the website. But however, Chair, there are a couple of things that I think we still need to look at and to perfect. For instance, Chair, the issue of capacity. We have been talking about capacity for a couple of years now. And I know that municipal infrastructure grant is a portion that can be used by municipalities for capacity. But most often this portion is not used to employ the permanent engineers and staff to populate the project management unit, but it's been used to employ consultants in some instances. And if you employ consultants to manage projects for you, that is not capacity based. Because you are going to pay them whatever portion of the NIC funding that goes to that municipality. And after a period of time, when the contract has ended, they will just go, there's no capacity that is left within the municipality. Now the question is, how does the department ensure that this percentage which has been allocated for capacity. That reflects capacity and disparities in what has been implemented. That is the first thing. The second thing, Chair, is with regards to over the past 10 years, I think 90 billion has been allocated, 80 billion was spent. There's another 10 billion that has not been spent, and we should be worried about the 10 billion that has not been spent. Because I thought the very reason why NISA was introduced was in order to make sure that there is enough capacitation of municipalities, and the department actually assists municipalities to manage. So the 10 billion over 10 years, which almost represents 1 billion per annum of money that has been spent to municipalities, that has been allocated in municipalities as well, must be very worrying. And I thought that we were going to get a plan from the head of NISA on how to practically support municipalities in making sure that they're spending. And in any event that municipalities don't spend the amount of money that has been allocated, what then becomes the role of NISA? Because that is what we need to get. The actual role, which is something that I've missed, Chairperson, I think we need to get that kind of a briefing. Because some of us are coming in this week's parliament. Probably the role of NISA was explained in the fourth parliament or even before. But we have not really gotten a sense of exactly what is the role of the municipal infrastructure support agency. And I think I don't know whether it was not a brief to the department, but I think we need to get that so that we can understand where does NISA come. Besides the employment of professionals and the engineers, because very commendable, we commend that, but the agency, what is its actual role? How does it come in if the municipality has not been able to perform? Lastly, Chair, we spend a lot of money putting in the infrastructure, but infrastructure that is there, it also needs to be maintained. And in most instances, municipalities don't make sufficient allocation for maintenance. And of course, municipal infrastructure grant can be used to maintain the existing infrastructure because its intention is to expand infrastructure, particularly to areas that were not receiving those kind of services before, particularly the poor areas. So the municipalities must be able to budget. And I think we might come to a point where a municipality must be forced to put a certain allocation aside, a certain percentage of their operational budget for maintenance of the existing infrastructure. But I thought that we need to start at the micro level to see that there is no correlation between what is happening now and the level of services that municipalities are providing to the communities. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the department and colleagues. Chair, I just have got three brief points. I'm sure maybe they've been covered, but I just want to extend a bit on them. The first one would be the internal capacity of NISA, whether they actually are satisfied if they themselves have got the capacity to perform the tasks and the duties that have been assigned to them. But I ask this question, Chairperson, to back up this. As you, member of the committee, you have the background, you know, the privilege of actually interacting with NISA in terms of just their core functions and their work. But I'm looking at the mammoth task that they have, and I think that what we try and gauge the levels of capacity that they are dispatching at municipalities, but I think we also are interested to know to the extent the capacity they have. The second point is that very grand figures have been given to us, and they paint a story of progress. And I want to think up to what that she initially said, that in spite of that, it just does seem to be ground in, you know, a surge of dissatisfaction. I wouldn't apportion that to, you know, the department per se, but I'm just trying to then gauge whether the monies that are being spoken about today, are they actually being spent where they're supposed to be spent? I know that my biggest problem with the auditor general is only that he just audits books and does not go and see whether actually that building is there. But if the book says building is there and money has been spent well, then he will, you know, give it a green light. So I'm trying to then assess whether, because there's also the petition out there, I wouldn't want to conclude it as fact that a lot of MEG funds are then redirected and rerouted to other functions within the municipalities and so on. So I want to find out the extent of the oversight in ensuring that the money is actually spent where it's supposed to be spent. And my final point, Chair, is the spending patterns at the end of the financial year. Sometimes we find people at the start of the financial year will travel 20 kilometers per hour in their spending, maybe through the up to 60 kilometers per hour. And they realize that the financial year has come to an end, and then they just start traveling 220 kilometers per hour in their spending. And that often has a lot of, you know, level of irregularity at that stage and other shenanigans. I mean, whatever, you know, misappropriation of funds and change drives. So the monitoring of the spending patterns in terms of whether there is a fiscal dumping at the end of the financial spending for the sake of spending. Chair, finally, is the extent of the linkages that you have now with the Auditor General and other institutions in assessing the financial management capacity of these municipalities and whether they're spending properly, and to say, do you continue pumping money into municipalities that are in a financial situation which borders on crisis and is in crisis, because you finally we are recycling the problem if you are not going to strictly, or, you know, ensure that the money is being spent properly, and that besides the skills that you speak of, the artisans and the engineers, but the extent of the financial management capacity as well, you could just get your involvement in that sense, and then also assisting the municipalities in being more financially prudent in their outlook. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Chair, that's the thing. First of all, the point has been raised adequately that that's better, Chairperson, thank you. I thought we were using the names today. Chairperson, the point has been raised quite correctly that long-term maintenance and sustainability of infrastructure is of concern. What does worry me is the suggestion that municipalities have to set aside a portion of their operating expenditure to fund maintenance costs, because the concern that I have is that the vast majority of municipalities have got limited revenue streams. They've got limited sources of revenue, and everything they've got goes into operational expenditure. They've got very little left over for CapEx, which is why they are reliant on MIG funding to do their capital expenditure, to do the capital infrastructure project that they need to do. So to say, well, we're going to set aside 5%, 10% of OpEx is then unrealistic, because the money just isn't there. They don't have that revenue to fund that. But I would like to ask the department whether or not they have considered putting a portion of MEG funding aside for infrastructure maintenance and upgrades. And the reason why I ask this is in the presentation you spoke about bulk connections and how you were counting households that are the new connections that are added to the system, and you're not counting the bulk work that's done. Now, bulk upgrades are a critical component to any infrastructure development. I'll give you an example. I was in Lekalale,
and I was shown a sewer main where thousands of new connections were connected to it. Too many for that sewer main to handle, and as a result, it burst. People flush the toilet and the pipe burst because there are too many pipes connected. Or you've got too much coming in, and the treatment facility can't handle the effluent that's coming in. So we need to consider maybe re-emphasizing that it's not just the number of new connections, but also what we're doing to capacitate those new connections. In other words, what are we doing to make it possible to have those new connections? And in particular, that slide that shows the number of households that have benefited, I think that our focus is maybe out of alignment there. You did indicate that NIG is supposed to supplement the capital expenditure of municipalities. I'd be interested to know what the capital expenditure is of municipalities in comparison to the NIG funding. In other words, how much are they actually spending of their own funding towards infrastructure upgrades? Then also, you went through the NIG allocation formula in quite a lot of detail, and we also saw that the Gauteng, for example, had spent 49% of its allocation on roads and stormwater. So I want to ask, how strictly is that allocation controlled? In other words, if you're saying that 75% is allocated for basic services and 72% of that is for water and sanitation, is there any control over you're spending too much on roads and stormwater and not enough on water and sanitation? What are you doing to address that? And then on the project status, the comment was made, and I'm not sure if I heard it correctly, but that projects that are registered, the term that was used, I think, was idling. You said that they sit there for a long time. But we don't know for a fact. I mean, we just know it might be something that was registered a week before the count. So we don't know that they're actually idling. So my question then is, what is being done to track how long projects are taking to move to the system? What is the delay from registration to sign and tender to actual construction to completion, and is there some kind of testing mechanism in that regard? Chair, on the challenges and support provided to municipalities, one of the challenges that highlighted is the use of mixed funds for operational budget pressures, and the Chief Director rightly identified Makana Municipality as an example in that regard where mixed funding was used to pay the salaries, not of infrastructure staff, but of all the staff, because the municipality had run out of funding. So, yeah, I want to know, what is the, you spoke about transferring the funding or shifting it through the district, that the districts have control over it, and that it's not used by the local municipality or inappropriate matters. But what has been done to recover misspent funding? And then on one of the last slides, you talk about addressing skill gap in municipalities. You spoke about the artificial water and sanitation process control that has been assigned to Bembe District. I'm very interested in this one because I've personally been on the ground there, and I've heard that people say that there was an improvement and so on. I was in Macaulay Municipality in Louis Trichardt a couple of months ago, and there's no improvement. The raw sewage is still flowing in one part of the treatment plant and out the other. It's not being treated at all. The testing ponds are caked solid. There was no staff there. There was staff, but there was no supervisor. There was no full regas. The air raises weren't working. The scoops weren't working. This doesn't sound like a good story for the deployment of these sanitation process controllers. The very next point, you talk about 32 municipalities in 8 provinces are being supported with 311 apprentices. Which province isn't being supported and why? Chair, I think that's it for now. One of my colleagues did ask about the reason why Metro aren't included in another one.
Yeah.
The first one on slide okay, there's no number. Project household beneficiary. At the end of the June.
The one that is having time though.
Yeah. Then what is happening is you set on water under the Western Cape is zero, and then on sanitation it's also zero. What could be causing that particular situation? Is it because of my narrow understanding that sometimes people who need the services, they build in areas that they are not developed? Or is it because the Western Cape is not doing the work that it's supposed to do? Please explain that to me. The second one relates to what you raised. I think the colleagues have raised, but I want to take another relation to Makana. Where Makana, there's a crisis in Makana, as we all know. And we must remember that Makana, for instance, covers six months the institution in which South Africa will find ourselves in future roles. And what is the intervention of the, what would be the intervention in relation to the, besides what you are saying, Makana has used the funds for parental purposes, but what is it that is in place in as far as government to intervene in that aspect? Because the crisis in Makana, if roads are not operate, the whole municipality does not operate. Is there a plan in place? Two, the response you have given to say, look, because of the situation in Makana, we have decided to give districts to handle the same funds. One, if you say you give Makana the same district municipality that has the same challenges in terms of running the funds, are you not also escalating the problem? Because what happens in Makana is a reflection of what happens in Makana district municipality in general. Is that the only intervention that you do? Let's take it for instance at the national level. There are many municipalities in the same way as Makana who uses this infrastructural grant for operational purposes. What are the concrete interventions, you know, the department is going to use to make sure that this thing does not continue? Are we going to review the whole process and come up with a new mechanism? King Daringa municipality, for instance, I know that everybody concerned when you ask questions why we are unable to turn around the situation that municipality in terms of infrastructure and so on and so on. People will tell you that the bus infrastructure, okay, the underground infrastructure in there is not maintainable. For years and years and years and years. And I want to know what is in place in terms of plan in intervening to that situation. Or should I accept that is this that the situation that will live with for the next 20 to 30 years as the people of King Daniel. The last one relates to the issue of skills transfer. We all know that there was an influx of people who left municipalities to open up consultants. Now, the same people is them who taking millions and millions of money from municipalities through consultants. I know of an experience when municipalities, people teach all the designs, project designs that were locked to be developed, and then they left and come back and they were the only one to develop those. The consultants you are appointing, what are the mandates that you are giving municipalities whether to live and build internal capacity in those municipalities? Or is just the appointment of consultants who come in and live with the institutional knowledge and go and use it in another municipality? Or the concerted effort to say build internal capacity to come and build new engineers. Or I think we've given up, we never have engineers. I was moved by the person I was talking to last week, who was doing consulting, which happens that we'll continue to have this thing of poor services in as far as what is provided in construction of roads, because the people who develop in roads, they make money out of the centimeters they build their road on. Because if you come there and look, you don't see what the road. The person who do inspection has been given his 2 million at the hand. And that person said to me, I've been developing roads. As long as we continue to have people keep outside people developing our infrastructure to tender, we'll never have quality of services. Now, as long as we don't have internal engineers to monitor those practices, we continue to talk about bridges collapsing and so on. When are we intervening in that regard, build internal capacity of engineers? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. The department will be then invited to comment on the area. We allow all members to tell them, because sometimes, you know, they almost similar. The department will summarize their numbers and some of the similar
areas.
Honorable Chairman, avoid temptation of talking to one other time. Because it's all about looking and assume of the other side. It's all about the same.
Thanks, Chair. More for the question one wanted to ask is already in cover, Chair. But just to emphasize on two critical points as well. My colleagues have touched on it. It's the nature of the allocation formula. I think of the challenge because the way they allocated this fund, it makes me believe that municipality, if this is the formula, like your B section where 72% is being 75% is allocated in. And even that 75% being spread down and even detail specific as to how that 75% in 100% to be spent. But you did find municipality in terms of the Auditor General reports that are being very bad. Where are they getting this money? Because this money we are giving them, normally we are told that they have shifted the MIT to certain points to deal with some of the administrative funds. If you are really following this trend, how are they spending those money? Because we could have seen that from the start and ensure that these things doesn't happen. So that's where my question is on the terms in terms of monitoring. The last one, Chair, if also you look at your spending trend. Your spending trends are almost perfect. 98% spending. There are no overspending. Even those that are underspending, they underspend very little so. Everybody seemingly is spending close to 100%, 88%. How are you achieving that when municipalities are, most municipalities are in this situation that where they are getting qualified quantities. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let me invite the table to department to take us through. You may class out the questions and then deal with them the way I class that. I think it has to do that if they are not covered, we call them to Honorable Masipa. Masipa will come back to you.
Okay.
Because we do have also experience having been like Honorable Mshubo. And Mshubo knows people who are sleeping, Yellow Eye Power who are sleeping every day. Also, because we are also employee at a certain point in time, I think also can emphasize some of the issues there. But let us invite the department, if they don't cover your oil, all absolute conduct to. The general and the team will take us through the some of the issues that are raised.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the very important questions that have been posed, including comments that have been given on a range of matters. A sizable number of them were specifically directed at MISA, and the acting chief executive of MISA is here, so I wouldn't wish to steal his thunder. I will allow him to fill those questions directly. Chairman, I will deal with just two questions for now, one of which I would categorize or rather describe as a relay question, in that a number of members have touched on it. But perhaps I should say, I mean, this is to the Honourable Member Mapulana, who obviously read the City Press article, I think it was written by Chris Biggs this past Sunday, dealing exactly with this same point, which relates to the issue of the impact. Because the country has done very well with regards to expanding access to services. But at the same time that has been happening, there has been indeed an increase, exponential increase, in the number of protests at community level. The critical question that was raised in that article, which I now repeat, is whether it is in fact accurate to describe those protests as civil protests, or in fact they may be predicated on other concerns other than service delivery. I guess the jury is still out on that question, Chairperson. I'm not going to attempt the question now. Suffice it to say that ZZA has recorded the fact that the country has done particularly well. Of course, there are still people who don't have access. But relative to many countries of our level of poverty, we have done particularly well. And that doesn't mean that there aren't challenges. There remain significant challenges that face our community. So I would agree with the sentiment that there isn't a direct correlation between protest and service delivery today. In fact, another commentator, whose name I will purposely omit, said that even if you had 100% service delivery, you continue to have protest and service, which tells you that there is more to the protest than the issue of service delivery. Chairperson, there was a more direct question raised regarding why is it that there's been a lot of talk about metros, districts and locals and not metros with regard to the municipal infrastructure grant. The metros do not receive the municipal infrastructure grant. What they receive is the urban development infrastructure grant, which effectively encompasses the kind of thing that MIG would ordinarily deal with in other categories of municipalities. But part of the plan was that in good time, metros would in fact be properly accredited to render those services more directly, as opposed to how other municipalities have these services rolled out in their context. That's the only reason why metros are not reflected on as extensively as all that in this presentation. And perhaps that answers the question, what is the relationship between MIG and the one that goes to the metros, the USDG. Let me invite experts from the department to fill questions more directly and perhaps invite the acting CEO of MISA to deal with those questions that relate directly to MISA. Suffice it to say that although there's a a 10-year history of the consolidation of Ghana, what has now been described as centralization. The municipal infrastructure grant, sorry, the municipal infrastructure support agent was only proclaimed in April, May of 2012. And it's been in existence since. And it will be able to explain what work it has done over that period of time. May I say, commendable work at that. But at this point, let me invite the civil officer to speak first and the acting CEO.
The director general, I think the issue must come. I just think that maybe that the department, whatever way that we can do it, and it may be a broader political issue there, and maybe we can do it in that way. But because we, I think the 21st century, we mustn't throw balls to understand what makes people to protest. That we can't throw balls, really, as some of us saw Suzofu. I do think that we need to find out exactly, because if the people in Kuruma, they say that our children won't go to school for the last 3 months because their road is not hard, and if that is the main reason why the children are not going to school, what I think is wrong anyway, should be condemned by any South African, because it can't be right. And we shouldn't avoid condemning this behavior, because it could spread and cause more harm than good to our children. But I do think that may not be the work of the department, but I do, because I know that department, every time when there's this protest, they are almost classified as service delivery protest, but the research says that South Africa says no correlation. The children are not going to school in Kuruma. The parents say that they won't go to school unless this road is tarred. I think the premier yesterday committed a staff now to say now they're going to deal with that road. Is it going to stop then the protest? But we must have a time, Director General, whatever time, just really for all of us to know exactly what is the cause of this protest. Because if they're not linked to service delivery, they may be linked to other things that we all don't know. Because we don't know exactly what are the issues that are raised there. And it would be wrong for 21st century leadership not to know exactly what are the issues. Otherwise, now we are throwing balls, General. The Kuruman, we are throwing balls, they say, they vote. And then here they said, South Africa says no. But we know, as we see here, that children are not going to school. The damage that is causing to these young kids, who are supposed to write metric, maybe in 2 months' time, I'm not sure they're writing, I think it's November, is bigger than I think we think. I think there's a bigger problem to Mother Trump. Of course, but I think the whole kind of leadership is that Mother Trump is. But it's important for a department also to take some of this is to know what is wrong. Where is this problem coming from? And then we can address it. Okay, so let's take another check there. And I think we're the one that is coming in. Take this out, but yeah, so let's mention the challenge that we are putting in for future discussion.
Chairperson, we accept the challenge. But the challenge lends itself to a platform akin to a seminar, rather than an accountability platform such as this year. Because now you're inviting us to share ideas that may not even be ours. We would be sharing with you what our commentators have to say. And there's a lot that's been said about political infighting and protest, and a lot of other things. I don't think this essay says there is completely no correlation. What it says is that not all protests are actually linked to service delivery. Perhaps the one in Kuruman might well be. But you might also find that there are underlying things. That no well-meaning parent would say that because I can't drive my car on the tar road, I'm happy to have my kid stay at home for 3 months without going to school. It's much bigger than a perceived failure of the municipality to provide that. The stakes are much bigger than meets the eye. The big question is, how do we lay our finger on it, in a sense? And my view, Chairperson, is that it would be a good idea for us to have a broader conversation on this matter, but in a societal conversation. Why is it that people burn down libraries, the very same things that they need, the very same things they have struggled for over the years, simply because there was a shutdown in water for 2 hours, or whatever the case may be, that the computer is optical based for many libraries? We need to ask ourselves the question, what is going on? What is wrong? What analyzes all these things and the manner in which people express themselves?
Humanize what you're saying, Shane. In the sense that, you see, this is not a one-way discussion. I agree with you. And it lies nowhere else. It lies with us. Because it's us who provide the services. Therefore, a conclusion on this aspect should come to us. I hope when we deal with the basic, back-to-basis, the context in which we're going to be placed should broad look into these issues. And I think I like your approach to acknowledge that some of the public service process, they emanate out of the weaknesses we have. We can't continue to say we cannot have weaknesses, but we should be having a coordinated way of saying, how do we do this with the situation? Where we cannot let it go, where people just end. And those that people teach children should not go to school, and all of us are fine. Therefore, I want to support that. Maybe when you come back to make a presentation, even if you're not in relation with the discussion, run a process of commissioning a survey on this, and also providing us alternatives how to engage with communities in relation to this. Thank you very much.
Okay, cool. Now, we'll consider all this as a totality of problem. I think we'll do this to move on. But back to basically an attempt to address a very good question, depending on the question of local authority. But you are right. The department is coordinating the entire cabinet, the national, the provincial, and the local one. And also include the traditional leader.
Yeah.
So that we never met with them at the moment. I think we have to meet with them soon. It would be very nice to have one of the there. Teach them. I don't have a traditional leader in Alexander. I think most of the doesn't have it before. So maybe that is now. I don't know. And if you're the one in Cape Town now, I'm not sure they have a problem. But like the point that we have still the bigger issues of the cooperative government. All spheres of government generally are regulated according to what we do. And then how we coordinate our activities are very important for us. And that's very important. I think we'll deal with some of the issues in the seminar, workshop, we'll read all the tests and analyze them correctly. Like all information is not absolute, it's just giving some answers. Then we have to work beyond that to see what we want to do. Look, you wanted to take that too.
Thank you. Yes, I will touch on
that. We are from there now, we are fluent, but I said it before. We are from there, or I said it before.
I will touch on that. It's one matter that I actually, the project, when I was in MISA, I initiated the 56. I think the food market, it goes back to some of the issues that I raised earlier. Which I believe the interministerial committee, but those issues then become part of the agenda of that committee. If we currently have a program when it comes to roads, in terms of road ownership, now the roads in question are found that some people may regard it as a district road. Some people say, no, this is a provincial road. Others will say, maybe the national road. we find a gray area where this road remains untenable. Sometimes we find people toying and saying this is the municipality, the municipality has nothing to do with that. If they tempted to spend money on that, then the municipality gets qualified. But why do you spend money on somebody's asset? And that's part of the agenda of the IMC, road issue, but the road classification in the country, we need to finalize. To say this road belongs to this, then you have to treat it as your asset as well. I think it's one issue that when we look at this story, people tend to be influenced by other things. But also, I think there was an issue that was raised about community ownership of this infrastructure that we are dealing with. It's one other area which is problematic. It is about communicating what government is doing to the people. Sometimes they may be doing a lot, but when you don't communicate, people don't even understand because they're not involved. So they just flow with the mode of that time. So I think it's one thing that as part of the back to basics, those issues need to be targeted seriously. From the big point of view, every project has got a steering committee. That involves community there. And what we are trying to make out now is to say, at the start of the project, during the implementation, even at the end of, communities must take that ownership as part of the project steering committee. And then it's one thing that we realize that over time, that has not been effective. And it's something that, as part of going back, I think we have to address that. The issue of the capacity, I tend to agree with it, but for us, the capacity is not more about to say you don't have skill. Because it's a decision making by that municipality. As I said, in our principle, we have a budget of about 40 minutes. Now, for the PMU to get good people there. But when you sit with the municipality, say, please send me an engineer. Actually, we're a deployee of me in that municipality. But the question is that 14 million, I think, is good money. Where I work, I don't even have that budget for the staff complement. Now, with 14 million, you can go to the best engineer that you want. But why are we not getting this? And I think that's one serious question that when we talk capacity, it's now bent into that area. And if it's not addressed, we can come with many missiles and so on. We're not actually going to deal with the real issues that are creating the capacity challenges in the municipality. The use of the question of nickel, yes, I think the DG touched on it. When there was a serious indication that some of the 8 metros will be accredited to perform housing functions, then it was then seemed to be a possibility that if we get housing money and the USDG money, put it together, then cities will be more flexible in doing this. So the portion of the MIG that was for cities was then taken out from the Department of Cooperative Development. It might as well be meant settlement to try to facilitate, because as Honorable Masondo indicated, there are serious informal settlements in metros. But when you go to remedy, you don't actually have that problem. But when you have this money put together, it's not helping. So one second to say, there are many funds that have eventually, let's address them somehow. So I think if the human settlement can be invited to come and also bring the committee on the USDG, I think they can be changed too. But we also, through the IMC now, bringing all these discussions at the pleasure. And we have the first in-house meeting next week to get all the departments that have undergone to deal with this issue. The issue of the formula, in terms of the formula to address the municipalities that have got lower allocation. Yes, indeed, we have a particular formula that we use. First of all, we get the need in terms of the formula. Any increment for every financial year, before we put it into the main formula, we determine the amount of money that we need to utilize to top up for those that have committed. And how we give it to them, we also check if it was going to be through the need formula, what percentage would they have from this top up funding. So that what we are saying is that they must be spending less than 5 million. And those are mostly Northern Cape and Western Cape. So they actually know backlog in terms of saying they are not people without access as compared to in our terms. Their challenges are upgrading, as we correctly put. We have to upgrade infrastructure to deal with the additional or new developments, the increments and so on. But when you go to Arakapo, you just have villages and villages, no infrastructure, nothing. So that, those are the challenges that we have. So there is a problem that we deal with. The issue of the financial years of municipality, I think this one, we are trying to address it currently. And one way of addressing it was to say, we don't need to transfer NIG in terms of national financial aid. So now we transfer NIG from July to March. So we are not trying to align, because that used to be a big problem. But now that has now been aligned. And the way there are challenges, I think we identify them and try to deal with them. On slide number 6, where I think there were issues of retail. But what it means is that retail is actually in advance in terms of project management. See, registered means this project was it's just in the system. It has not moved the stage of being put into our system, where it goes to design and tender from their construction and then completed. Now, when you have a zero in a registered project for that financial year, because this is the end of the financial year report, so it means that means those municipalities there, they have actually wiped everything from registration and from tender, and everything was under construction or completed project. So that's what they did. And as I indicated, the so free state was pending the highest than all the other provinces. So it means that they have most of the project in the implementation side. The issue of the 10 billion, that is the difference between 91 and 80 billion. I think what I said earlier was that you find that at the end of financial year, you have like, well, that 1.7 billion. So that amount of money, it's no longer available for municipalities. So municipalities must then go back to Treasury and request for help. And if Treasury decides not to roll over that money, then the municipality must pay it back to Treasury. Or Treasury takes it from its revenue. So that funding was accumulating until we have 10 billion. So some of the money Treasury might have paid back to roll over, but what they are reporting there is that the accumulation of underpinning for all the financial years. I think O&M question is the serious one. From the MIG policy one, there's a policy that guides me. It doesn't allow MIG to spend money on operation and maintenance. But we are finalizing the review of that policy. One proposal that we are putting, which we are sharing with National Treasury, is to say let's allow at least 5% for now of MIG to be used on repairs, not operation, yeah. on repairs. And we are saying that we must pilot first of all the traditional district. But for me, those are the ones that are currently pressed with the O&M issue. Let me give you an example of our town. The Annam government is investing about 1 billion in that district for infrastructure. It is your original infrastructure bulk from water and the municipal water infrastructure from water assets. Now that coordination comes to about 1 billion. But if you look at the bush that flows to that district, it's about 400 million. Now, 1 billion investment, 400 million bush for anything. And this district is in rural area, close to the town, where it's so difficult to recover the money. So in terms of that, we'll have a lot of schemes that I think are not attended to, as we indicate. Because that is not only about the people now. It's also about the operationalizing that. You may have people, but they don't have tools, they don't have money. There's nothing that they have to work with. And I think that's one thing that we are proposing through the new formula. But we have differences with Treasury. So I'll have this with us. Treasury still saying, no, can't go that route. But it's something that we are still waiting on. We have now taken the policy to the minister, and we still need to get his views around that. Now, if you look at what is the South Africa is saying in terms of this financial, it's saying in terms of infrastructure, government is on a long way. But this infrastructure, it will be maybe water for a year. And after a year, you go there, pipes are there, there's no more water. And you go back and say, what's the problem? And they say, no, this is a bulk problem. And no, the problem is that the treatment plant is not longer working. It's the functionality and so on. So those are the O&M issues that we are seeing. Let's take a look at me and see how we can address this. And if you look at most of the ongoing currently, public service, this service delivery protest. When you go there, you find that there is no infrastructure. maybe they were cut off for 2 weeks because of other things. Then people go to strike. Not to say there's no infrastructure. Infrastructure is there and has been implemented through this program. And I think it's one thing that we are saying through that review of the COVID. It will assist us to deal with some of those issues. The issue of the Makado that you raised, actually, by the time we deployed those people, the Repairs Association from Makado were going to take the municipality to court for not having the requisite skill. And some few months after we have deployed those skills, I saw one of the chairman of the Repairs was interested in the local newspaper. No, no, no. The district now has got capacity. So no, we are dropping that. We say they are changing. But obviously when you have put people there, but there's no money now to buy, you know, things to replace the chemicals and so on. So that becomes another challenge. And obviously we need to find a way of how we assist in that regard. So I think most of the questions that were infrastructure, I think, I had to deal with the colleagues from
No, thanks. Probably one would start by quoting, I think, a suggestion that was made by one of our honorable members, that maybe there is a need to have a second that will take the honorable members through a more detailed presentation about the role, the mandate of NISA, internal capacity, you know, all those issues, so that we at least we can move from the same premise chair. So we will await the invite of the committee in that regard. But needless to say, Chair, that as an example, that would even assist us to talk about the issue of NISA. I think there are some issues that would need to be clarified. Just to make an example, I'm not going to go into the detail of all this. I will await that presentation. As an example, the issue of that the meat has been centralized through NISA. Just to correct that, meat hasn't been centralized through NISA. There's no meat that goes through NISA at all. So the meat funding goes directly to municipalities. And NISA's responsibility is to spend support those municipalities to spend that meat fund. But also, you know, the questions about the improvement in municipalities. I think also that presentation will help us to show the analysis that we made to demonstrate the improvement in those municipalities that we've supported. What improvement has been made in those municipalities since our support? I mean, just an example. I mean, I don't want to claim that the improvement, as an example, in the meat spending as a result of NISA. Of course, it's a collective effort being led by the department as the custodian of NISA, who has directed the municipalities that are not spending properly. I mean, the mere fact that between 2012-18 and 2013-14, there has been an improvement from 79 to 91. That on its own should give members or should demonstrate that there is a plan both within the department as well as working, of course, with NISA to ensure that we address the challenges that are faced with by municipalities in those areas that are infrastructure related. But also, it would also even help. I mean, I know that the Honorable Matondo spoke about informal settlements as one of the areas, as an example, that we are not talking about as NISA. And I think and made an example of metros as areas, for instance, that are perceived by informal settlements. And that would even help us to clarify that as NISA, we are not involved in metros. No. And so the idea was that we'll target those municipalities, those low capacity municipalities, and support those, and leave metros and high capacity municipalities to other institutions to take care of those municipalities. So, as I indicated, we'll await the invite check. The list of the 32 municipalities that are supported through apprentices, we will certainly provide that list. There was also a question around, I mean, that we could provide it by latest tomorrow, hopefully by end of the day today. There was a question around the PMUs. Does MISA replace local PMUs? Certainly not, far from that. The mandate of MISA is to help municipalities build their own capacity and system in relation to infrastructure development and management. And we therefore work through the PMUs themselves and in the process ensure that by the time we leave, the PMUs have been strengthened, the PMU office has been strengthened. So we it will go against our mandate if we were to replace the PMUs. We try as much as possible to ensure, in fact, again, that presentation will indicate those instances where we have, as a focus, we have gone into the municipalities to just support the PMU functionality, ensure that by the time we leave, the PMU in that municipality is functional. I mean, that we can share specific examples of those municipalities. And then there was a question around the shortage of skills. I know that there will always be that argument about whether do we have shortage of skills in municipalities or don't we? And there are different opinions around this matter. And from where we are sitting, is that we have done an assessment of technical skills in the municipalities that we support it. And we found that there is indeed shortage of skills. And so it's proof that there is shortage of skills in certain municipalities. Of course, we're not going to generalize and say all municipalities have shortage of skills. So in those municipalities that we are supporting and with far shortage of skills, we then develop a plan to ensure that we would assist them to have those skills that becomes a short to medium term plan. There was a question just towards concluding, Chair, and then there was a question, of course, around, you know, the tenting. I think Boloko has dealt with that. But there seems to have been an expectation that MISA would have, over the, you know, the 10 years, assisted those municipalities to ensure that the expenditure is there. And unfortunately, MISA has been there for just over a year, just less than 2 years, so it's or around 2 years. So of course, then that I think that expectation we accept that, you know, that expectation, but I think it must be looked at going forward in terms of MISA's operations. The internal capacity of MISA, once again, we will share all that, but I would like to just confirm to the Honorable Shema that indeed we are accepted as MISA that we need to strengthen even our own internal capacity. I mean, we've got also even a number of coaches that are not filled or that are empty. And that on its own doesn't help our cause in terms of the support that we provide to municipalities. So that certainly is something that we would believe we need to look at. And then lastly, there's this issue around operations and maintenance. And from where we are sitting as MISA, to continue arguing that municipalities must set aside money for operations and maintenance is not healthy, because they are not setting aside that fund. So it means we need to find a different mechanism to ensure that municipalities put aside funding for operations and maintenance. And there are various options that we can look at. One is to ensure that this amount that is, we insist that the amount is ring-fenced within whatever funding that is sent to municipalities. It brings sense for operations and maintenance, and they are unable to use it for anything else. And since then, we rely on the fact that they will do it, and they are not doing it, unfortunately. So we certainly something, unless we do something drastic or urgent as soon as possible, we're going to find that in 5 years' time, we'll be chasing the roads around operations and maintenance. Thanks a lot.
Yes, thank you very much. May I suggest that we meet? I think we've been sitting for a long time. And we have applied permission to meet until 3. The permission is granted because we must finalize the debt issue. May not be for law presentation, but it's a critical presentation for Honorable Pulani, what do you understand?
Not sure. But this issue of the report by Statistical Africa, it's a critically important report which this committee needs to interact with. So I'm going to propose that we should consider inviting Statistics South Africa to come and make a presentation, either in the form of a committee meeting or in the form of a seminar which has been proposed, so that we deal with that report and we understand what the report is saying. The report is available on the website, but I think it would be better to get that broad presentation by the Statistics of Africa, and then we'll be able to deal with it, because either now or in the future we are going to deal with this phenomenon of service delivery protest. Thanks.
Oh, okay. No, I do think that we must invite the statistician general. Yeah, I think the department also should attend. Just as a briefing on this because it's just important, but also the decision general is his own way of presenting things. Always captures our mind when he presents it. I'm not sure where it's time now, because he told us this time in 2009 from Tesla. That time is growing, we don't know time, maybe now it's a little bit. He must come and brief us. I think he presented very well, and I think it would be very useful really that we do that soon. Because then that will inform me of our understanding of the challenges the committee will face as we move forward. Given the fact that we are going to have 2016 elections, all that. And then it will be very important for us to have that discussion. I'm told that the election is waiting. I'm told that the election is there. Maybe the best way that we can do, and I would say myself, to pray for in half an hour, and we come back and then they make presentation on the desk. And then we then invite them again to come with us. I think the teacher general must be by then soon. And just to come to the issue that we have to finalize soon. And just I'm not sure that the teacher general has dealt with the question of traditional leadership. And then but there's not there to them, but it was very interesting in their area of why, what are they doing? Because they are paying them. But they are paying them, except their name, what else they are doing? And then we hope that they are not, I know that we are a traditional leader by association. No, let us pray for this. Or 30 minutes, I think we can make it, if not. But I don't try to do that. I know that there's a stitching that started two. And then, but of course, we have granted the permission to meet and meet. We have agreed that it's work in progress, really, all the points. Is it all? a very challenging issue that we must address. The quality of services, the provision of services, workshops and summits that you look what we can do together. And we should then proceed for this then. We should then proceed for this and deal with some of the issues. Anyone is also senior good to make a presentation. Bamatonza. Cooperative governance is very busy.
We're busy cooperating.
I know.
Thank you very much. This is the letter that was deferred from our meeting last week. And we had made some adjustments to the presentation. Is that correct? We the ones that were circulated last week, we simply just told you a story about what is a debt and what causes it. But we hadn't included slides that talk about what are those things we are going to do to try and help municipalities recover. So we included some slides that speak to that specifically. Mr. Kitty, who is the Deputy Director General responsible for Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations, is going to take us through that. So we will basically give you categories of people who are responsible for the debt and how best the municipality is dealing with, the municipalities are dealing with that, what is our role and the role of other government departments and public works. But let me not steal Mr. Segeda's thunder.
Thank you. Thanks, Honorable Chair. Firstly, before I go to the presentation, there were two questions earlier which were not responded to. One was relating to the correlation of mixed spending and classified voting opinions. And the response is just a simple one that when you spend, you are qualified because you did not have followed the certain due processes, or you might not have complied with a certain regulation. And the second one that was not covered was whether, in relation to the challenges that Makana is facing, is that not a reflection that is also infrastructure? And when we assess the municipal spending on the MIG around February, March, there were two districts, the Tanzania and the Sadaki. The local municipalities that are under those districts requested us to say, if you are reallocating some money to us, we will request the district to assist us and support us in implementing the funding that you will be reallocating to us. So Sadaki and the Tanzania were one of them. Chair, the presentation that I'm going to make, just to indicate that this is based on the information that we collect from the Section 21 Report of National Treasury. I will be very quick. That is just the outline of the presentation. We just want to provide the commentary of the data for the debt for the municipalities as at the end of June 2014. The presentation of last week was at the end of March. We are not doing some form of comparison between the end of March and the end of June. We will just refer a little bit to that. And we also want to indicate some of the challenges that I experienced in the recovery of debt. Mostly because especially if we look at the alcohol debt as well as the business debt. That becomes the direct responsibility of how municipalities are implementing their credit control policies and bylaws. Now, as of the end of June, the debtors are indicated in that slide. The total amount of debt that is owed to municipalities is 94 billion. Now, the debt that is really worrying is the one that's over 90 days because it's already reaching a stage where you cannot be able to collect it, and that is around 75 billion. The one from 0 to 30 days, that one is not yet debt per se because it's still within the period in which debt has to be serviced. But if we look at the customer group, government or organs or state are owing municipalities 4.5 billion. And the commercial or business, they are owing municipalities something around 19.7 billion. And households is the largest at 57.9 billion. Now, we can be able to draw some form of parallels with regard to the household debt. Firstly, there are issues of collections that municipalities are not able to do. Secondly, there are those municipalities that in our context may not be viable enough, and therefore the local economy is not necessarily employing a number of people there, which results in the number of people being poor and may not necessarily be able to service that debt. Although we do have the free basic services component of it, which is funded through the equitable share, but they never meet the kind of debt that they are having, and therefore it results in those kind of debts. So we'll be able to talk a little bit on how we think we should be responding to that. The bulk of the presentation really is more on how we can deal with intergovernmental debt. This slide is just an indication that the consumer debt as at the end of June was at 94 billion, and this is 7 billion more than what we reported last year in June, because in June last year it was 86.7 billion. The government's share of the outstanding debt is 4.8% or 4.5 billion. Percentage-wise, we might say that government share of the debt is very little. But when you come to look at a municipality like Mir, like Mutare, if that amount is paid, you are able to see some form of pride. And if you do a sort of a cross-referencing in terms of the creditors, especially you look at the amount that is owed to perform like 3.2 billion, if municipalities were paid by government, we can be able to say there could be some form of relief in terms of those municipalities that are also owing water boards and the ESCOM. The issue around the largest debt of the 51% that is for households, I've already mentioned that, and then business and others. Some of the issues of non-payment can be attributed to your economic slowdown, unemployment impacting on households' ability to pay, as well as the lack of political will to collect. What we have observed across the board is that when you go to a municipality, they will have all these plans to say we are going to be embarking on these campaigns of pay for services and all those kind of things, and communicating to communities around those matters that are relating to them, communities not paying. But a year before the elections, you find that that's been going down. So those are some of the things that we have observed. I have covered a bit of the first bullet point in this slide. On the second bullet point, we are
saying that you have secondary cities that are owed around 17.1 billion in outstanding consumer debt. Now, secondary cities are around 19 to 21, so if you look at that amount of debt, if we can service that, we could be able to see some results, because some of the issues of service delivery challenges that municipalities are facing are as a result that they cannot necessarily maintain some of these aspects of discussion that we had earlier. Now, in terms of the debt by province, the overall debt by province, irrespective of the customer categories, you realize that we have almost all the provinces. If you look, for instance, at housing, the 6.6 billion is your current debt. Now, that one is the debt that they can still be able to service. KwaZulu-Natal, the same. But if you go to the debt that is 90 days and above, you go to Gauteng, you go to KwaZulu-Natal, you go to Western Cape, Northwest, Mpumalanga, Free State, and then Eastern Cape, they are about 5 billion. So that is where we need to also look at how to deal with our interventionist measures. Now, the Gauteng province has recorded the highest level of debt at 41 billion in total, including your current one, and KwaZulu-Natal 10.1 billion. And then you have the rest of other provinces. So we have not done an aggregate in terms of provinces and not necessarily for each and every municipality. Now, with regard to the government debt, which is your intergovernmental debt, historically, the Department of Public Works was in the custodian of most of the state-owned properties, and therefore took the responsibility of payment of some of the property rates. Now, in April 2008, all the provincial properties were devolved into provincial Department of Public Works. And prior to the devolution of the function to provinces, the National Treasury made the budget available for public works to pay all the outstanding rates. And they further requested municipalities to submit all of outstanding invoices relating to the devolution of properties to the provinces. And the invoices amounting to 443 million were submitted. And to date, 243 have been paid. I must ask them to say, Chair, that the remaining 200 million that has not been paid is due to the fact that quite a number of departments are disputing the invoices from municipalities. And when you go to accounting officers of various departments, they tell you that if we pay and we are still having a problem with the invoice itself, we are going to be qualified as the department. So we need to deal with the issue of verification. Now, in that regard, somewhere last year, there was this intergovernmental debt steering committee, where we agreed that Public Works is going to just get a service provider. We're going to go to each and every municipality that is accounting to the remaining 200 million, because at the moment the 200 million treasury agreed to roll it over to the following year. They have not taken it away from Public Works. So that service provider was not appointed. The department has again advertised as tender to get the service provider to do the verification because of capacity challenges in itself, and the tender is closing tomorrow. Now, that will deal with the first phase that has to be completed in March 2015. It will only deal with the 200 million that is remaining in the coffers of Public Works. The second phase will deal with the totality of the government debt, and that will be done in the year, in the financial year 15-16. These I've already mentioned, that the steering committee is comprised of ourselves, DPMT, National Treasury, Public Works, and SALGA. And this steering committee was formed in 2011. Sometimes you do get some form of progress due to certain interventions, but they become sporadic because they wait for either the minister to come to MECs or other ministers, and then they respond. And when you wait for another quarter, they then go back. So the steering committee identified 20 municipalities across the provinces. But before I get to the 20 municipalities that were owing the highest, I just need to show you the slide which is showing the breakdown of the 4.5 billion that is owed to government, and in which province that 4.5 billion is relating to. So that is just an indication of that breakdown of the 4.5 billion. Now, if you look at March 2014 and June 2014, whether there has been any form of a movement, if you look at the last column of the slide, you'll find that Eastern Cape had a reduction of 4% in debt, while at least Eastern Cape and housing that had a reduction, Mpumalanga had a zero. But quite interestingly is the Western Cape, which had an increase of more than 201%, as well as Limpopo and with 59%, and everything with 26%. But usually when it comes to Western Cape, what they normally do is that they pay the total amount in advance most of the time. Next week on the 15th, we are meeting with all the sectors that are moving, and the Western Cape and the Eastern Cape are going to be presenting to us what are the strategies that they are utilizing to be able to assist in getting government to pay the debt. Now, the 20 municipalities that we are monitoring across the provinces, in the Eastern Cape we have Nelson Mandela, Matatiela, Fort St. John's, and in Free State we have Manaung and Marudia Kofu, and Gauteng is the city of Joburg and the Kempuleni, and KwaZulu-Natal we have Mfunduzi, Uthukela, and the Etekwini, in Limpopo we have Bapalahura, Lukwane, and Alaseni, and the list is the 20 municipalities that are monitoring. Now, if you look at those municipalities, you'll find that the city of Joburg registered between June 2014 and March a reduction in debt of around 33%. That seems to be the highest. On the other hand, you'll see a correlation between the previous slide and this one, that the city of Cape Town had an increase in the debt in the big month of something around 93%. This is just an explanation of that previous slide in terms of saying those municipalities that recorded increases are Pulukwane, Kolplai, Kimanaung, and then despite the recorded increase, there are some municipalities that have recorded a decrease from government debt, and that is the issue of Joburg and Bapalahura. Now, what are some of the challenges that we have observed in the in the servicing of debt in general? Some of the Section 21 schools are the ones that dispute invoices provided by municipalities. The second bullet point is exactly an accounting responsibility for accounting officers or CFOs. If your debt has not been paid, you have to charge interest. You are allowed by law to do that. And some of those invoices that are disputed, you find that these independent schools or departments will say, but why are you charging us interest? There is also no standard approach to handle the transfer of properties by human settlement to municipalities. I think the challenge here is more prevalent in the city of Joburg. They've raised it with us to say they want in the IMT that Oroko referred to, for us to also talk about this matter of the question of transferring this property. And municipalities continue to bill the department for service consumption by residents until change of ownership to those services affected is related to the issue of human settlement. The tenancy in government property has also been a contentious issue that has constantly surfaced as an impediment to the payment of outstanding debt. Now, what is it that we have done? The minister has written to MECs requesting them to indicate actions that they are putting in place, and they have to be reporting this as in MINMEC to indicate what are you doing with the municipalities that are failing to collect. Is it a question of your billing system? What are the issues? And the department, in collaboration with public health, like I said, is engaging a service provider to resolve disputed invoices. Both the first phase of the 200 million that is still sitting in the coffers of public health, and the balance of the 4.5 billion for the government part. Municipalities have been engaged as part of the action for solid outcomes to improve their assets register. This is going to indicate to them where are you really sending the invoice. Are you sending the invoice to the Department of Rural Development when it was supposed to be going to public works? All those kind of measures. And we are saying for the business that own municipalities, municipalities have to implement their credit control policies and bylaws vigorously, because that is one of the customer groups that you need to be enforcing your bylaws vigorously. If they don't pay, you just you either cut the service so that they are able to pay. And some of the mechanisms that we are currently utilizing is that the method of the intergovernmental debt is now a standing item in the Fosters Mango. Public Works was presented last week, Monday, to Fosters Mango, and they want us to be indicating specifically which department is owing and what is the head of the department doing about that particular department that is owing. In provinces, it has also become an item in the Premier Coordinating Forum. Now, in all this scheme of things, OCTA has a particular role to play, especially relating to the implementation of the Citizens Act, I think Section 95, 96, 97. So we are currently supporting municipalities by assessing the credibility of the credit control and debt policies in line with the provisions that I've mentioned of the Municipal Systems Act. We did an assessment of 30 last year, and we then gave them an indication to say when you go to your budget policy, these are the things that you need to have, and where you have your credit control policy, you need to also follow it with a bylaw so that you are able to enforce it. We have included in our APP again this year a project that we are talking about, a campaign to that would be on cultivating the culture of payment by communities for services that are done. But we are also saying when you enter into this campaign, you need to make it a point that there is continuous service provisioning, and in the event that there is a service disruption, like we are going to be experiencing in Malaki from the 29th, where Water Affairs is going to take 18 days to refurbish one of the water treatment works. We have already engaged the municipality. What is the plan that they are having for that? They communicate to the communities of Sanala, Kril, on that kind of interruption, and what is the interim measures that will be used to deal with that particular measure. And finally, we are saying you need to really establish this customer care and management strategies in the event there is a service disruption, so that communities are aware. We can use the systems of SMS like what Mukali City is doing. They will send you an SMS to say there will be an outage here, there will be an outage there, and this is how we plan to deal with that particular outage. Chair, that's the report from us today.
Okay,
thank you very much. For the presentation. Of course, the report is presented to us for noting purposes. It doesn't mean that we had both sessions to clarify that. But they're not expected to do anything except today. But of course, you're not all against that. And, okay, no. I think it's a very good presentation. Let us then take through what are the issues that we want to raise on the report. And then we note today the report. I think it's a very good report. It's given us a broader sense about the challenges that we are facing around the issue of payment of services. Honorable Masson.
Let me just I think this is a very good report. And there's also a sense that something is being done in a systematic manner to address the issues. That's very, very encouraging. But the question that I want to pose is in relation to some of the properties and the kind of problems that they continue to present. Around progress, for instance, one of the key problems that I've noted over the years is this whole question of hostels. So what used to happen before is that the individuals were linked to hostel beds, and they would pay for their own beds, and there was some administration of some kind that would ensure that the monies are collected and all of that. So, over the years, there's no linkage of persons or individuals to beds. So anybody comes and stays in a hostel. Among other instances, the police are very familiar with this problem of big criminals. Run away from KwaZulu-Natal somewhere and go to a hostel and just stay there, hide amongst people who are located in the hostel. And of course the question of how the hostel is administered and the systems and all of that becomes very complicated because the system is virtually collapsed. And of course the fact that some of these hostels belong to the province and some belong to municipalities. And the province often enough, because of lack of control in these hostels, are unable to, are not willing to be saying that they're very reluctant to pay the municipalities for service. Because water, electricity, refuse movers and so on, it's a service that's provided by municipality. The hostel belongs in terms of ownership to the province and so on. And then something that has been done about visiting the hostel, so that often it's the medium some of the problems, and therefore I think advise accordingly. Because if the facility belongs to a municipality, many municipalities will take it over, convert it into family units or something like that, and therefore the issue will be dealt with practically elsewhere. But from the time this arises, we manage to pay it, and the province is then asking the question, what are we paying for? Because they know that there are no systems anymore, and so on. Yet the question of transfer of these properties remains a big problem.
Comments? Yes, thank you, Honorable Masson. Honorable Philly. Honorable.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I think the report is straightforward, especially in as far as what the department is going to do, because that has been our concern. So is this appointment of a service provider which is handled by Public Works and which you say it's closing in this week. Yeah, I think the department must just make sure that, I'm not sure why is it handled at the level of Public Works, or it's because Public Works is responsible for the debt. But the department must also have some kind of follow-up on this tender so that it's finalized and then we're able to aid the municipalities, because 200 million is a lot of money. But at least there is something that is being done, and I think we can be assured about that. But you know, generally municipalities are the last creditors to be paid by people generally, households. When you receive your salary, you start prioritizing other things other than the municipal account. The municipal account is the last to be paid. And that's why you'll always have a problem where people are able, they've got the ability to pay for services, but they're not, because they start somewhere else. And if you compare this to SARS, you've got no obligation, you've got no option not to pay SARS. SARS will make sure that it receives what is due to SARS. So maybe the department must just liaise with SARS and SARS in the municipality so that some of the strategies that get used by SARS, I know that they've been given a lot of leeway in terms of legislation to collect. But the municipalities, on the other hand, who are also part of the state, are not given the kind of powers that other institutions of the state are given to collect revenue. It's just a food for thought. Now, the issue of the campaign to cultivate the culture of payment. We used to have Matakane campaign, which was introduced by the department to try and move people away from that mindset, because it is ourselves who said to the communities, no, don't pay in the past. But now, communities must pay for the services that they are getting. I think probably there's a need to revise that Masakane campaign, Chair. It's another suggestion that the department can look into going forward. but what is of concern is collection from business. Because according to the report, I think 21% of the debt owes, which is about 19 billion, is from business. Ordinarily, business should be able to pay, because they are, you can't be in business if you are generating any profit. There's no business that can be able to exist without making profit. So I know that we were from recession, some businesses have been through difficulties, but theoretically, municipalities must be able to collect for businesses, because you can't talk about indigent businesses. There can't be a business which is said to be indigent. At least in households, we know that majority of our people are not working, there's no income and so on. But with business, I think municipalities must be encouraged to collect. This should at least increase to be at the same level as government at 4% or less than 10%, not 21%. But let's welcome the report. I think it's straightforward.
Thank you very much. Honorable Ashu.
Honorable Shimon Pillar has covered issues which I'm going to raise in terms of business, but also my concern is the relationship in
the Obama atmosphere.
No comedian left to don't take them. I think we need also to revisit the very systems of municipalities, which is also a direct cause of this cultural non-payment, where they are administrating the billing system. And also, their indigent registers are not up to scratch. So I think we need to look into those things on how do we improve on those registers so that their books are clean. More especially this one, because you know our people are poor, they cannot, they're unable to, most of them, not all of them. But if you don't register those in the indigenous people, then you will keep on incurring debt which are unnecessary. I think this goes back to, I think, to the basic issue, because I think the basic issue would be our manifesto for the next 2 years in saying what we do in terms of responding to some of the challenges, in particular revenue collection in local municipalities. Therefore, I wish to say when we see that document, we should see it talking to some of these issues, how we're going to deal with the state of the, for instance, the organs of state debt. Because the government cannot pay, the government owes a lot of money to local municipalities. It's like that thing that people are saying, if it holds, people say you must pay it holds. But they don't want to hear other things. I mean, I'm not going to mention it today. Now, the people who say government is not paying, even ourselves are not going to pay. Therefore, I support that there should be a framework in that document that should talk to this issue. Also, commercial industry. In terms of that, debt collection, we must also be able to be more firmer and stronger. I've mentioned that in Port Elizabeth, my constituents, that I'm proud of, that we found out that even some commercial businesses are tampering with electricity to like illegal running ships, and are shocked that there can be such a thing, that even commercial and so on can do those things. It shows our inability to be firm and penalize businesses who run away from responsibility in this respect. Therefore, I think the basics, whatever we're talking about, the plan going forward to talk to this. The reason why I wanted to speak on this was, which happens in a certain way, and then even if we didn't say anything, but we can deny it now, but next year, when we receive a report of this kind, we'll expect you to account to say, what have you done respect to this? Can't really come back next year and give us the same statistics, and then say that the report is nice. I'm not going to say it this year, I'm going to say it next year if it's nice. Because not nice, as long as there's still 19 billion rand on the commercial industry, 4 billion rand owned by all kinds of state. In the Eastern Cape, we had a situation where municipalities would even cut off services to schools because of dependence owing local municipalities. We don't want to see that kind of situation. Unfortunately, on this one, I'm not going to say it's nice, because this is the money we're supposed to collect. as I'm going to pay my 250 ticket also.
Just on a clarity again, Chair, you tried to explain, but I missed it, the special slide 12. The Western Cape 201% and the Mpumalanga 100%. I'm trying to synchronize how the Western Cape is dealing with this debt. Just if you can explain to me on it, Chair, that's all, Chair.
Okay. Okay, now, so just, I think we can switch that to answer some of the questions that you want, that were commented already.
I hope it's not bad for that,
that people are driving all the latest top of the range cars, but they can't pay R500 per month for services. Informal segment, even there, a lot of people really can afford informal, not necessarily those who are indigent. I think the large number of people are not indigent. They must make a contribution. I think we must phrase it in such a way that the person sees that they cannot pay for services in any country. And they must phrase it, it's a very serious campaign, because if we don't do that, the local state will collapse. The local state will collapse because this man is going to be 200 million. And where in hell can you run an organization that is owed so much money? But every day they must provide services to people. Where they're going to get money? ESCOM will collapse because they will owe ESCOM a lot of money, and then it's going to be a bigger problem. I think we must set a good campaign that will capture the patriotic nature of South Africans. That is a duty for everyone to pay for government to run and provide services. And the one way or another, I think we must do that. It's going to take long, but it's better to start now, as Phil is proposed, than to wait and feel the damage. I think there is damage already that is done now. I'm not sure anyone is paying in Alexandra anyway, Zigil. I know that your cousin are paying there. If you go to your cousin there, 16,000, they don't pay. And they're driving Porsche, but they don't pay your cousin there in Alexandra. Not because they don't have money, maybe because of other issues, but they don't pay. I just guess that we must really deal with this issue of non-payment of services. It's killing the state, and it's causing more harm than good. You can't even maintain facilities when there's no money. When you give them 5 billion rand, they'll take it and pay people. Because the staff also must be paid. I don't think it's possible to owe the staff. I think it's a challenge that is facing all of us. But again, it's an issue that we're raising early on in societal issue. Unless we raise the patriotic side of South Africa. Just to see themselves illegal not to pay, that we are doing tax. Of course, that is people who are dodging tax, but there are not as many as people who don't pay for services that are rendered to them. And there are still people who dodge and tax evasion and some not paying at all. This is true. But the South Africans must see themselves as responsible for their own state survival. And I think a nice campaign that could be phrased correct can be very helpful over years to encourage South Africans who pay for services. It's a lot of money. You know, the brand is a lot of money. Let us take some comments if you want to comment, Department. And then we'll allow you then to give us a concluding solution statement. And you can then move.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just a few comments, really. Honorable Marcel, the issue that we have raised is the issue that the city of Joburg, when we engaged with them, even before the minister went there, they had raised that issue. We have said that is the issue of the IMC, that it needs to look at those particular matters with the human rights. Honorable Mkulane, we are involved with Public Works. Like I said, we will have a session with them on the 15th. It's just a workshop of the intergovernmental team. But they've also agreed that we should send them a representative when they adjudicate on the terrain itself. The issue of us, we also looked at is we have caused a few differences in that we municipalities are not necessarily allowed to use the same instrument that SARS is using. But what is more important is that SARS is a very good database of anybody that they know is working and is earning so much, which municipalities do not have. I think it also comes directly to the issue of the indigent register. We have a project in our APB currently to look at the credibility of indigent registers so that as and when a person starts working, that person is removed from the indigent register, the exit strategy management. Honorable Plan is the issue of the campaign massacre. Now, in fact, we have indicated that we want to really model it around that massacre campaign. The issue generally of the billing system, for us, we don't think it's just a matter of the billing system. It's just a question of identifying where your assets are and who is owning those assets so that you then are able to deliver your invoice to the right person. That goes across the board, whether it's a business entity or it's a household. Because you can't send an invoice to a farmer only to find that that invoice is bearing the name of my DG Matamsela, who has not even have a chicken in his house. So those are some of the things that we are saying, and then when we also deal with the project from there.
What might
want to
have more
to do
at the moment?
And did I do?
Honorable, the issue of illegal connection, we realize that within the context of losses that I have experienced. If you look at this issue of losses, either in electricity, in water, and quite a number of things, they are attributed to illegal connection. And if you are having, if you're talking about back to basics, and you are able to measure, if I may use the example of electricity, you are able to measure from one point to the entry point of the valve point how much kilowatt hours are there or KVA getting into that, and then you go and measure at the point where you are distributing to people, and you are able to say, but when I come here, this is the situation. But why is there this loss? The Deputy Minister gave an example of a Malakini, where you try that here is a business person owning a sort of a hostel, like it's just having a direct line from the substation to his place, and he's paying 50 rand a month. Mm-hmm. But he has got quite a number of people who are paying for the electricity to him, but he's only paying 50 rand. So the losses generally are attributable to issues of illegal connections, to issues of polluting between some of the revenue officials and the business sector. We are aware of those kind of issues. Honorable, just on the issue of Mpumalanga and Western Cape, if you look at that slide, we are just indicating that between the March and the end of June, what was the difference in terms of payment? You find that the amount that is left from Mpumalanga is only 1.5, and the interest rate terms we are saying is 0%. But if you look at the Western Cape, is although the amount generally in Western Cape that is owed is very small, but when you look at between March and now, it looks like it is the highest in percentage terms, but in monetary terms it is the smallest. But there is an explanation to that. Normally what Western Cape does, when they pay the total amount because they do the verification. When I got the report from the NEC, they do a verification for each and every municipality and they pay in bulk once off. So you find that there are very little that is in a contestation. So it might be that for this period they have not yet paid, but when they pay, they will pay in bulk. Honorable Chair, I would like the DG to make some remarks.
The way forward from the department. Chairperson, thank you very much. We take this message as because as it was already pointed out, not only are various stakeholders indebted to the municipalities, the municipalities themselves are also indebted to us. If their debts are set, I'm thinking about ESCOM, among others. If their debts are not served, then it becomes difficult for them to be in a position to service those to whom they are indebted. So it is quite an important matter. It would be interesting in that seminar that we're going to have to look at the level of indebtedness to municipalities in those communities where we are seeing these many protests. Because people have an expectation that services must be delivered. And that's all we look for, because we believe that the constitutional rights to something. But we never look at the corresponding responsibility to pay for those services. It would be interesting to see what the correlation is when we do that assessment. But Chairperson, we are happy with the questions we've received. We hope we have fielded them as best as we can. Certainly, the biggest chunk of our work still lies ahead. So by this time next year, we should be able to tell you a different story. And indeed, the back-to-basic approach, also focusing on these matters, that we must have, these are part of the basic matters that we must have right, if the municipalities are going to work and work very well. It might be premature at this stage, Chairperson, to want to sponsor a campaign, which would have to look at, among others, whether honorable members of Parliament are servicing their debt to municipalities well. No, similarly, whether all public servants, whether all employees of Salga or in the country, whether the councillors themselves are paying, whether corrupt officials are paying, everybody, senior executives in corporate, whether they're paying, because we are the people that must set a good example. And if this is to be a societal issue, I think we need to do that. And an institution like Parliament is the most representative institution in society today. And this is where the best example can be set. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I think he's excited because it's only 250 rand for traffic fine. If you don't pay, you multiply it by 1,000 rand. Colleagues, thank you very much for the contribution. I think it's a very fruitful mission. And we are going to take forward some of the proposals that are put forward. Have a discussion together on some of these issues. Hopefully also we'll invite the traditional leadership to be part of some of the meeting. That today we have the Royal House of the Western Cape, the Koyster. And then they were here also themselves, they want to be part. Acclimatizing themselves over the development of this cooperative governance, a traditional affairs. And it will be very interesting really to ensure that there's this discussion and take them forward. This. I think the department side, all the proposals that we put forward are attention about it. The team must look at them. And in our next meeting, we will then deal with some of the issues. Of course, next month, Nava is what is called the I think it's called Edvedo. I know that we have part of trust in that thing. I'm not sure the Edvedo. I think we are going to do that. And have some discussion on that, the WIP and our committees about staff. Generally, we may need people to have our own strategic retreat as a committee once back to basics has been presented to us. Then we have to prepare us a better one to do that. But I wouldn't tell you, because they are from Tarasol. I hope that is not about the debt that you don't pay for services. And then I think once left a presentation, honorable to the Congress and the department, once you are ready with all these basics, be it high with the office, and then you come in, the minister, deputy minister, have a discussion really. Because it will be very interesting how do you want to take the local state for, particularly the local state for, while at the same time you are coordinating the entire government. It would be important for us that we do that. And then immediately after that, I think the commission will have its own retreat, just again to develop an action plan based on the basic, federal basic services. And then if there is more information, of course, you will share with our offices from time to time. Just to ensure that we are on the loop in terms of looking at the challenges that we are facing. I think members will commit themselves to be participating in that campaign as we move on in addressing some of the challenges. Thank you very much, colleagues. We know that we have to be in fun. Thank you for coming, all of you. And then we can then address some of the issues in our next meeting. Colleagues, you are going back to the chamber now. I'm not sure if there's any question to the minister. Tomorrow, what we should appreciate though that your team answered all your questions before, and then I think we are very able today. Deva is not talking a lot, he was very satisfied that we went to the strategy this morning, and we are very happy that the cooperative governance ministers presented all the answers and the follow-up questions easy to design. And then because without answers we can't design the follow-up question. Tomorrow, of course, is very exciting because it's our cabinet chapter question time. And hopefully everything is confirmed in your department. And that was very good for us, and we are very thankful for that. I think we should keep on working this way and turn around many other diplomatic areas. Even Nava now is a converted person. He came here by default, but now he's a member of the committee. Because of the main energy the department is assisting us to address from the shelter. Yeah, thank you very much for this.